thank you to our sponsors, Digital Magic the Gathering Online Card Specialist, CardHoarder.com, and MTGOTraders.com. And also thank you to our paper magic specialist, GondaPlaid.com, along with Cape Fear Games, a online card store and brick-and-mortar card store. You can find us each week on MTGCast.com, StarCityGames.com, TCGPlayer.com, MyMTGO.com, and MTGSalvation.com.
Hello and welcome, everybody, to another fabulous and man-filled Monday Night Magic, episode 219. And I'm excited because it's like old homie. This is homecoming because, Conley, you are back.
Well, I was just thinking about it. I think we need to get a female on the cast now.
If you can find one. I mean, my wife is on every once in a while, but...
You just said man-filled, so we have to get, like, an actual host.
Or you just get, like, a cheese Danish, and we'd be cheese-filled.
Well, I mean, I could wear a push-up bra and change my name to Jacqueline, if that would help any.
Yeah,
you already do that on Saturday nights. If we did Saturday Night Magic, you would already be a female.
Just when nobody else is around.
All right, fair enough.
I found this out at a... I went to my friend's wedding a couple weeks ago, and he has an older uncle who has the same name, also Jerry. And apparently he is well known in the family that he, underneath his suit, he is always wearing lingerie. Like, that's just how he hangs.
Gotta be more comfortable.
Another uncle whose first name is actually Freedom in America, or Freedom Land of America.
That's his middle name?
That's his actual, legal first name.
Oh, did he change it to that, or that's what his parents named him?
That's what they named him, Freedom of America. And his last name is Pounds.
Well, I think it was Frank Zappa that named his kid Moonbase 1.
Yeah, like Moon Unit, Zappa, and Alpha, and just horrible things. Guys, Eric, he was on the show. He was talking to us just before this. Right now, it's hurting inside right now because we haven't even talked about anything magic related yet. We're already talking about weird first names.
Well, we had to get our hug out. We had to hug it out.
We did because, you know, I need Conley and I need Jack. We're going to be talking about a ton of magic news because we had Gen Con this past weekend. And Conley, you were actually there.
I was there for five glorious sleep-deprived days.
And I had a dream about Gen Con, even though I wasn't there. And Conley, I actually dreamed that you won the Vintage Championship.
I did not.
I know. I said this happened in my dream.
I know. I did okay. I should have top 8. I started off 4-0, 8-0. I had not lost a game with a deck that I built at 7:30 in the morning, the morning of, and it started at 10. So you have to actually, like, I don't know if anyone's ever been to Gen Con, but basically you have to... You can't pay for anything directly. You have to buy, like, state fair tickets, effectively. You have to, like, go and buy these state fair tickets, and then
you need Walt Disney dollars?
Kind of.
You can't just pay with actual money.
But you can only get 100 tickets at a time, and they're $2 a piece. They come in $2 ticket intervals, so you have to go back and get multiples, usually. So you have to go buy these tickets, which takes at least a half hour standing in line, and then take the tickets and... you go to the event center where you're going in the tournament and then pay via those event tickets. So, like, signing up for any tournament takes over an hour, at least.
Wow, that sounds really poorly organized.
They do it so, like, I don't know why they do it, to be honest.
Not more than one person gets stabbed in the eye during Gen Con?
Yeah, probably to get more people, like, jobs.
You're in my seat. Ah! I stabbed!
And the blood was all over his Harry Potter shirt.
It was. Hogwarts never looked more sad.
But yeah, so I woke up at 6 a.m. the day of the Vintage Championships and wrote an article. And then around 7:30, I started building my deck because the day before I played in a Vintage Prelim. The first place got a couple buys and, like, a netbook computer. I played in it with a Mono Blue Workshop Aggro deck and was not happy with it just due to the metagame. There's a whole bunch of people playing Workshop decks. And for anybody that doesn't know, Mistress Workshop is a card that taps for 3 colorless mana, but you only can use it to spend it on artifacts.
It's such a ridiculous card when you think about it now. Yeah, ridiculous.
It's pretty So the deck is famous for doing things like turn 1 Lodestone Golems and Trinispheres and stuff like that, Chalice of Voids. But I was not... I didn't want to play my Workshop deck due to it having a 50-50, maybe a little bit better in my favor. But pretty much 50-50 against other Workshop decks. So the morning of, I decided to build a deck, and I did so. Started off 4-0, was doing really well. And then my Dark Confidants decided to start throwing themselves at me and killing me. And my Mana Crypt started to not cooperate as well. And combined with a few really sick hands from my opponents, I lost the last 3 rounds to not top 8. If I had won round 5 or 6, I would have top 8'd. And then if I had won the last round, I would have top 16 and won, like, $50 worth of packs. But
okay.
It was a bummer. My deck was a very not vintage traditional. It had like Avon Mind Sensors and Abyssal Persecutors and Dark Confidants, Bitter Ordeal. Should have had a Vindicate, but I couldn't find it in time, so I ran Oblivion Ring. It's a one of some like Swords and Paths, Cabal Therapies. It was pretty good. It had like no rods. It's just a strict metagame deck. I modified it slightly for the next day and played it in another vintage tournament and did pretty well in it too, but both times failed to top 8. So
okay.
I'll have more information on that deck in particular, like full deck list, and talking about it and stuff in my article on Channel Fireball this week, as well as like information on some of the seals and stuff I did. But I guess we'll talk about more as we go into more Gen Cons related information.
Yeah, I mean, we can go into Gen Con right now because that's where a lot of our news happened this weekend. We had a lot of big championships happen.
It's true, but there are also a lot of other things that... So Gen Con is it's a mashup of like everything you could possibly imagine, and Magic is a very small portion of the overall convention center. It's like the back area of the card. I mean, it takes up the majority of the card. The card playing halls, there's two of them, I guess. But like they gave away from the vault relics for the first time at Gen Con, and like every time they did so, it was insane. There was people stampeding over people, screaming, running from across the room just to try to get a ticket, and like things like that seemed very poorly organized, and it was a little scary actually just to witness, because there was literally hundreds of people just jumping over tables and whatnot to get to the booth. But yeah, there was also a lot of well-organized events, in my opinion, at least for such a large thing, and events firing off. They fired, like, 320 drafts over the weekend.
Yeah, they mentioned this on a lot of the Twitter feeds from the Wizards folk. They mentioned all these... Was it Dueling Grounds? Who was that was doing the stuff there?
Pastimes.
Pastimes, that was the PT one. I think they're at a lot of the big events.
Yeah, they are. But yeah, it was crazy. I played in... day one, I played in... the Vintage Prelim, and I guess that's it. I guess I didn't play in much else that day. Day two, played in Vintage World Championships, and then that night played in the Two-Headed Giant Championships. Made it all the way to the finals of the Vintage, the Two-Headed Giant Championships. Lost in the finals to this Insano deck with, they had Frost Titan, Sun Titan, Jace, and Angelic Arbiter in one deck, as well as, like, double mind control, double pacifism, and a bunch of other stuff. Then the other deck had, like, Triskelion, which got unsummoned by his teammate twice, Protean Hydro, which came into play three different occasions, a Royal Assassin, and then some other rare I don't know of, and then, like, double Doomblade, a whole bunch of insane other cards, multiple Liliana Spectre, which is quite good into a giant since both opponents discard a card.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's each opponent.
I'm saying this is sealed two-headed giant, I'm assuming.
Yeah, sealed, okay. Sealed two-headed giant championships. But yeah, their decks were pretty insane, and we got crushed. Our decks were okay. We didn't have too many, but like I had a Stormtide Leviathan and an Ancient Hellkite in my deck, and my teammate had a Serra Ascendant. But other than that, we really didn't have any like bombs, which is kind of crazy. We were pretty much like working off our synergy. I was playing this blue-red control deck with like four counter spells and a bunch of removal and pyroblasm and stuff, and my teammate was playing blue-white aggro, with like White Knights, and I was throwing Volcanic Strengths on his stuff, and it was basically just some synergy between like the aggressive deck with like basically a clock and a couple excommunicates and unsummon things like that just to buy time, and then me playing the control deck and just enhancing his creatures and countering stuff. We ended up getting second and got 48 packs. First place was two iPod touches, so it was kind of a big drop off, but oh well. Then Saturday, I slept in for a while. The Two-Headed Giant Championship started at 9 p.m. and ended at 7:30 a.m. So
what? So it was like an overnight tournament?
Yeah. It goes all night long. Gen Con's 24 hours.
Wow, I need to talk to the Gen Con folk. That's bad medicine. That's bad mojo.
It was. But yeah, so it's 24 hours. They have events running around the clock.
I want my people to be cognitively impaired for our tournament. Let's hold it overnight.
So I was going to play in the Legacy Championships on Saturday, but due to the fact that they were starting at 10 and Two-Headed Giant ended at 7:30, I did not want to stay awake for another 12 hours or something and be awake for close to 40 hours straight. So I went home, got a little bit of sleep, came back, played...
I bet you could have.
Maybe.
I'll wager on it, even.
I probably could have, but it would not have been my best Magic, let's just say that.
I would bet 50-1.
I'm putting $20 on that, and you heard it here. Conley just made a bet.
I, I hate you. Did you guys talk about that last week?
We are coming back to because we did that Monday, and that was before all the other like responses came out, like from Devin and Wesco and every other person on the planet.
Yeah. Anyway, so Saturday night I came back and they held a impromptu vintage tournament for a camera, like a
brown. I hope it was a really old camera, like a Brownie.
No, it was like a vintage. Oh. It was like a flip video camera that was like decked out in Issa Rae style or something.
Is that a really low cut top on it?
No.
Oh.
But anyway, so I played in that, and that's when I did okay. I just played a modified version of my deck. They announced the tournament 3 hours before it was going to happen. It wasn't on the schedule ahead of time.
So what do you think of that? I mean, is that kind of cool to you, or does that kind of rub you the wrong way where Magic is being prepared for the metagame and thinking through your deck and making it, or are you just like...
Well, I mean, they weren't planning on having it, but basically people that played in the Vintage Championship the day before talked to Pastimes and they're like, hey, would we like to have more Vintage tournaments? Can you do so? And they added it to the slate. So, I mean, they really just went out of their way to do it. Like, you can't be upset. It's not like they had planned on it the entire time and just failed to tell us.
Oh, okay. I didn't know. I was like, oh, we're going to surprise them this time.
No. They were cool about it. They just wanted to add more Vintage tournaments. They actually held one more Vintage tournament on Sunday for the same prize as well. Anyway, I did pretty well in that. Stayed up all night long throwing cards at my friends. So the Vintage ends at like 4 a.m., and I was hanging out with
Dave. You're killing me with this description of your time schedule.
I know. So, and I'm hanging out with Dave Williams and Bob Maher and Mike Solison. I think his name's Solid. I don't know. It's difficult. Everyone just calls him Solly. But anyway, I'm hanging out with them. We go to like Steak and Shake. We're Pack Warsing. We're actually planning on playing. There's a Pack Wars Championship on Sunday where you literally play a game of Pack Wars or Mini Master, whatever you want to call it, and then the loser is eliminated from the tournament, and the winner adds an additional pack to their deck and moves on to the next round, and you keep doing that until the top eight where you reset and then start over. So I'm planning on doing that, which starts at 11 a.m., but I realized I can't make it that far, so I joined the Sealed at 9 a.m., and open up a pretty sick sealed pool and end up winning that and getting a foil set of M11. So it worked out. And then went back home around 6 p.m. So I've been awake for like 28 hours at this point. And then
I'm shaking my head in disappointment. Well, you can't hear it, but that's what's happening.
Well, Gen Con ends at 4 p.m. on Sunday, so there's no more events or anything. So, and I have a two-hour drive back up north to my parents' house, so I decided to get some sleep before I drove, and I slept till like midnight or so, and then left from my parents' house around 3 a.m., took my friend to the airport, and...
Apparently the meth dealers right outside Gen Con must have had a really good weekend.
Probably. I mean,
you look sleepy there, buddy.
It's because it's open 24 hours. And then, like, Noodles and Company extended their hours to 3 a.m., and they got a whole bunch of money, too, so...
Tell me you had the Wisconsin mac and cheese. Please tell me.
I did not.
Oh, that will change your life. There's like three different types of cheese on it. It's amazing.
I've had it before.
Oh, okay.
I didn't have it during this trip. I only went once, and I had a beef stroganoff.
So, like recipe for gas during the next tournament.
I mean, I had gas all weekend anyway. You're eating Steak and Shake, wings, and Noodles and Company, and pizza the whole time.
No, like any tips for like how you treat something like gas? Like when you're at that tournament?
I literally bought some Gas X.
Okay.
I've never used the stuff before. It worked out okay.
You took it orally, right?
Yes, I took it orally. I actually bought Gas X the week before at GP Columbus, and I had some left over. But the reason I bought it the week before is that I entered into some, what's the best word? Some poor choice bets at Buca di Beppo. Is anybody there? Can't hear.
Oh, yeah, I'm here. I'm trying to figure out like, how much you could eat or like.
Basically, yes.
What's a poor choice bet? Is this like three-legged jeans, or like what are we talking about?
Yeah. So we go to Buca di Beppo. There's like 10 of us. So we go to this other place first. We end up moving to Buca di Beppo because the first place can't seat us all. But we sit down, and I order a pitcher of sangria for like our table. It's like a gallon, basically.
Isn't that blood?
Sangria?
Or sangrial? Never mind. Sorry.
Yeah, sangria is like, it's like wine with like fruit and brandy sometimes, and you put the fruit inside of it, and it like almost makes like a, I don't know, it almost makes like a wine cooler, but it's not actually a wine cooler because it's legitimate wine and brandy. You just put the fruit in it on the spot.
Unless it comes in a cold activated can, Conley, I may probably not have had it pass my lips.
No, it's delicious. It's kind of girly, but at the same time, like, I just wanted something cool and refreshing. So anyway, I ordered this gallon of sangria. and comes out the table, and somebody's like, I bet you can't drink all that plus eat all your meal. And I was like...
And top eight.
No. And I was like, I definitely can. Like, that's ridiculous. And I hadn't been to Buka in, like, 3 or 4 years. And they have... Basically, they serve everything family style. So you have these gigantic portions. Anyway, so I make the bet. And then later on, it gets added. Like, I'm eating the meal. And I'm like, I could even get dessert with this. Like, I'm, like, all cocky.
There's the bad idea.
That's what the alcohol speaking.
Yeah. No. Trust me, I did not get... I have a high tolerance to alcohol to the point where I've probably been legitimately drunk 3 or 4 times my entire life, and I can drink a lot. Anyway, so they have tiramisu there, which I was planning on ordering anyway, so I go ahead and add dessert onto the bet. It's a stupid bet for like 10 or 20 bucks, like some retarded, but I'm like just trying to show off. So anyway, I order tiramisu, and I eat all my pasta.
It's a weird way to show off, man.
I'm drinking. I can't back down from a bet. I'm drinking all my sangria. Like halfway through that, I'm eating all my pasta, and then the tiramisu comes out. I didn't realize that it's literally like 10 inches in diameter, 5 inches tall, like made for 4 people. And so anyway, I'm eating that. I get about halfway through it just fine, and then it starts to hit me. And like at this point, I'm literally like putting a piece in my mouth and just letting it sit there for like 10 minutes while it dissolves.
It's like a big sugar wafer to you.
Debilitated, like and plus there's rum inside of the tiramisu. So everyone's thinking I'm going to get drunk, but I'm like, I had way too much food to get drunk. But so like I'm just eating and eating and eating, and it took me half hour longer to eat than everybody else. But I did end up winning the bet, and then later on that night, intentionally made myself throw up because I could not move because I was in physical pain every time I would move around. So then, of course, they videotaped me doing so, and I'm sure it's on YouTube at this point. And
every time you said, like, I did this, but I know I won't get drunk, that's like what a drunk person says. Like, every time I hear that, that's what goes through my mind. I'm totally not going to be drunk after eating the 6 pounds of tiramisu.
No, I legitimately wasn't drunk. I was just, like, in pain because I couldn't move.
the pain kept him alert. It's a Klingon tiramisu pain stick.
So I end up getting gas eggs the next day for that, as a remedy for that.
Then and a stomach pump.
And then I had some for the next week. But, yeah, so that's basically what happened at Gen Con. There was Owen Turtenwald had an insane run this weekend. He top-aided the block championships.
And he was also – he won the Vintage, right? Or is it the Legacy?
I was listing off.
I'm sorry.
He top eight of the block championships. They actually did a split in the top eight, so there was really no reason to play it out. So top eight is basically like winning. But then he won the Vintage championships, beating Bob Maher, winning the giant altered art Mark Sapphire and selling it to Dave Williams. Then he top two'd the Midwest Masters series, although they also did a split in the top eight for $1,250 each beforehand, so they were just playing for pride at that point. But it was pretty insane. He probably collected close to, like, I don't know, $5,000 to $10,000 in prizes this weekend, so he had himself a good old time.
Now, was he a player that was known before? Like, yeah, I'm not a big tournament player. I didn't recognize the name.
Yeah, he's got 3 GP top eights. He's a good player. He's kind of like a Pro Tour ringer. He's never had a Pro Tour top eight or anything like that, but he's known on the Pro Tour pretty well. I don't have much to say about Owen other than what everyone already knows. Overall, it was a pretty good weekend. I pretty much restricted myself to Magic-related stuff. There were, obviously infinite other things going on the weekend. There was people outside dancing in barely any clothes at all, wearing, like, weird costumes from Final Fantasy and zombie outfits, and it's weird. It's like the nerdiest nerd stuff ever. And to be honest, I'm not the biggest of all nerds. I don't really do anything other than Magic. I'm like, everyone's walking through with manga stuff, and I don't know what the hell it
is.
So
there's actually somebody there taller than you? Is that what you're telling me? You may have actually been the biggest nerd there.
Okay, I might have been the biggest nerd there. You're right. There might have been. I'm sure there was someone taller than me. I wasn't looking for one. I don't go around trying to.
Sneak up behind him and, like, stand backwards to them so you can, like, try to see how tall your head is?
No, I do not do that. Oh, okay. I've thought about it before.
Now, this is something where you kind of mentioned the whole cosplay thing. Is there ever, like, been a video game or a movie or something that you liked enough where you almost maybe would cosplay that? This would be for you as well, Jack.
Not unless it's for, like, Halloween.
Like, I would for Star Trek. I've always wanted, a Starfleet uniform.
I would never dress up for anything other than Halloween. Or, like, as, like, a joke or a bet or whatever. Like, I've definitely gone to some, like, dress-to-offend parties where I've gone as, like, a burnt Jewish person.
Wow. We had one of those with but it was offensive T-shirt slogans, and some of those were amazing.
Well, I mean, I when it comes to dress to offend, I'm literally one of those people that, like, I'm anti-political correctness just because I think, like, all the fun in the world is taken away when you start being overly politically correct. Like, as long as you don't have intention to hurt or harm somebody with your words or whatever, I think, like, being, like, making sexist or racist jokes is actually funny as long as they're, like I said, not, like, actual intent behind them is a bad thing or whatever. So when it comes to, like, a dress to offend party, I just pull out all the stops and go for it.
What about for you, Jack?
Well, unless it's Halloween, I tend not to dress up, like, unless it's something really subtle. Like, years ago, I used to have a S-Mart t-shirt, which is from, I don't know if you guys are
familiar
with it.
Oh, Evil Dead, Shop Smart.
Yeah,
Shop
yeah.
S-Mart.
Yeah, I used to have, like, a S-Mart kind of, like, work shirt. But other than that, no, I try to avoid it. But, I'm known as the guy that dresses up as the Joker in my town, which shows just how, like, small a town I actually come from. And so once a year, I get to dress up as that. And, I mean, that's fun, but, nah, usually I got to keep the clown makeup away. It's just, it's too tempting, but no.
There were quite a few Jokers at Gen Con.
Oh, well, I guess Batman's pretty hot right now for...
Sure.
Was anybody, like, dressed up as, like, angry Christian Bale or anything like that? That would be awesome.
No, but, I mean, it was pretty much, I mean, there was Avatar characters, there was manga characters, Final Fantasy characters, there were people from World of Warcraft, there were people wearing nothing but a sheet, like, thin sheet, like, walking around just to get attention, showing off their boobs and stuff. There was, of course, the people outside giving away tickets to, like, the strip club. It's just insane. It's, like, the most... It's kind of...
Where was Gen Con?
Indianapolis.
They have strip clubs?
Yes.
They have
strip clubs, but apparently there's... This is unconfirmed, but I was told there's a law that you cannot be completely nude in Indiana, so they wear, like, very, very, very small pasties. Like, literally pasties that cover up the actual tip of the nipple, but not the rest of the areola.
Oh. I thought maybe it was like North Dakota, where all strippers legally mandated have to have been alive when Kennedy was assassinated.
That's true.
What's it like, carry on a seat or what?
What's that? No,
I had a friend who was way off.
He was very intoxicated at a strip club, and apparently the stripper was old. I'm just going to say she was old. And so his way of drunkenly insulting her was to ask her where she was when Kennedy was assassinated, and then she threw a drink in his face.
Oh, that's nice. But yeah, they were showing off the goods. You know, they, like, give away the thing, like, this lady will be there tonight. And it was, I can't be flattering and possibly compliment her in any way. So let's just say that I don't think anyone would actually want to see this female naked for more than about 5 seconds. I mean, everyone wants to see everyone naked for at least a split second, but then after that, like, I would not be paying this person to ever see them naked again.
In Las Vegas, I kind of understand because it's legal outside of the city limits. How does it work, like, there? Like, were these just strippers, or were they actually, like, prostitutes?
No, they were just strippers.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And then, of course, like, all the girls at the convention, like, people thought, like, walking in, everyone's like, oh, it's going to be a 10-to-1 girl-to-guy ratio, but it's actually, like, I mean, it's definitely more guys than girls, but I would say probably, like, 2-to-1, maybe 3-to-1, something like that. Like, there's definitely more guys than girls, but there is plenty of girls there. They're all, like, into, like, their, whatever they're into, I guess. I don't want to stereotype.
I'm guessing mostly, like, I'm assuming, like, fantasy and, like, manga, but I don't know.
But, I mean, there was a ton of board games going on. Like, I remember, I think it was Saturday night, like, everybody stayed and played Werewolf all night long. I don't know if you guys know what Werewolf is.
Is that an RPG?
Oh, I do.
It's kind of an RPG, but there's no, like, you don't need to buy anything for it. You basically just sit in a circle and play.
And, like, just howl? Like, what do you...
No, you have to find out who the werewolf is without, like... You, like, lose townsfolk and stuff. I don't know. Jack could probably describe it better. But
it's actually more of, like, just a party game for people to get to know each other and socialize. Somebody pretends to be the werewolf.
That's
and
like
then
the
they turn
like the whodunit party mysteries. Right?
Yeah, pretty much. Oh, like, okay. Yeah, and, like, somebody will get removed from the group when they're eaten by the werewolf and stuff like that.
But literally, like, everyone stayed all night long and played that. So, like, you'd walk out in the hall outside of the gaming area because basically, so Indianapolis Convention Center has, you know, all these different halls that are gigantic, and any one convention center or any one hall could host, like, a Grand Prix, for instance. But then there's, you know, 10 halls, I would say, and they all have different things going on. So one's, like, the board game hall, one's the collectible card game hall, one's the dealer hall for the collectible card game, then there's the anime hall and all this stuff. And then on the top of that, there's a little convention room or, like, conference rooms on the sides that have smaller things to do with them, like artist signings and stuff like that. So literally all of them are full. I mean, I don't know how many people go to this, but it had to be... I mean, well over like 20,000 people.
Sounds like a blast, I'll be honest with you.
Yeah, there's just stuff going on. I mean, there's definitely stuff for everybody. Like I said, I pretty much contained myself to the card game hall. There was, you know, big, gigantic Magic going on all weekend with the big cards. There was, you know, artist signings, a million dealers. I sold probably $700 worth of cards. There's, you know, right next door is the WoW stuff for World of Warcraft. I'm not into that card game at all, but they had the World of Warcraft Championships, which a lot of Magic players play. It's kind of like their fifth Pro Tour.
I didn't know that card game still was being actively supported.
Yeah, they actually had, there was a dealer, Cryptozoic, in the dealer hall. You could walk up and everybody gets one free spin of their, they have like a roulette wheel basically, and whatever it lands on, you get a free World of Warcraft card, and they were giving away like Spectral Tiger, which is like this $500 card. You just get it and turn around and sell it to a dealer for $500.
Oh, is it the one you get like a mount with it or something?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Okay. That's why they're so good. But basically, every single card on the deal on the wheel is worth at least $5. So it's literally like walk up, spin, and get at least a $5 card. It's pretty cool. Most of my friends walked away with like $20. I didn't know anybody that actually got the Spectral Tiger. But I mean, World of Warcraft's apparently still alive and kicking, probably solely due to the video game, I would guess.
Yeah, but and when Cataclysm comes out, it's going to be
championships,
huge.
Which is they only do one a year. It's not like a Pro Tour where they do it 4 or 5 times a year, but it's $50,000 to first place, so a lot of the Magic players treat it kind of as like the fifth Pro Tour. But yeah, there was a lot of, as far as like big tournament prizes go, it's kind of funny, like the MMS, for example, Midwest Masters Series Championship. So first place gets $4,000. Like I said, the top 8 ended up splitting, so they all got $1,250. Mike Posgay, who's a friend of mine, he got 9th place. So 8th place is $1,250. 9th place, 8 packs.
A poke in the eye with a sharp stick. 10th place is a poke in the eye with a dull stick. All right, so how long is it going to take you to recover from this? Because you have Nationals coming up in not too long.
Correct, 2 weeks. Today I was trying to recover and sleep on a normal schedule, but I definitely got a nap in. So I don't know. Wednesday I have some people from Chicago coming down to my house to do testing, and hopefully it will break the format and everything will be good.
Okay. Jack, was there anything that you maybe covered for Gen Con news that you want to talk about before we move on to... We're revisiting the whole wagering thing. That's where we're going, but I want to give you a chance before we get on the soapboxes.
I bet against 200-1 odds that I have absolutely nothing to say about Gen Con that Conley has not already succulently covered with his own coverage. So let's go right on to the bet.
All right, well, Conley, we want to get your feedback a little bit on this week because we've had some things... new news break with this. And this is largely the open letters that have come from the people involved in this whole debacle. And really, it's become this huge thing.
I mean, anytime something like this happens in Magic, it's a huge thing. Whether somebody sucks out on somebody with some controversial play or something like this. I mean, it's something to talk about because it happens more often than it's actually publicized. It just doesn't happen on such a grandiose scale. So when it does, it's made into a spectacle.
And this time for this week, I actually tried to prepare by actually looking at the tournament rules, the floor rules, and also the infraction procedure guide, just so I knew exactly what little parts we're talking about and what the actual words say.
I think getting into that. I mean, I think this is a simpler issue than when you break it down into that. Like, so I know Craig personally. He'll be one of the players even coming down to test with me on Wednesday. He just moved to Chicago, actually, but. And I like Craig. He's a good guy. I stayed with him in the beach house in San Juan, and he's an overall cool guy. Regarding what had happened, I mean, I'm sure you already described the situation, so I won't go into that. But basically, I think he acted quickly and out of his own self-interest. He won't ever admit this, even to me. But anyone in that situation, when you're playing for the top 8, there's a lot on the line. You have a lot going on. And you just lost, and you're kind of defeated, and if the door is even cracked just a little bit, it's tougher to imagine anybody not wanting to jump on that immediately, because if you even think for a second that your opponent getting DQ'd there would get you into the top 8, you're at least going to consider it. And I think that might have been what happened, and then he immediately, not regretted it, but immediately found out what would happen, and then the decision became poor on his part, and he had to go and make an open apology to the community. This is my opinion, by the way. So,
yeah, because he did issue the open apology disc.
He admitted that he apologized or whatever, and the other player, we don't know if it was a joke bet or not. It was definitely wrong for that player to ever say anything, regardless of what was going through Craig's mind. You should betting happens a lot on the Pro Tour. Usually it's like prop bets on the side. Like, you know, I bet, like, you'll list off like 10 people that you think will make the top 8, and then your opponent will list off 10 people. This is like way before the Pro Tour even happened.
Yeah, and like, and you the add way this the is, come on, that would points, be a big no-no.
By each team or whatever, and like the winner wins some amount of money. Like, it happens all the time. It's just like good fun. And then, like, you know, money drafts obviously occur, which is technically betting. And this kind of stuff happens, but it's kind of accepted amongst the pro community, and you kind of acknowledge it, and you just let it happen because it's fun. Nobody's getting hurt. You know, it's your money. Wizards isn't being affected. The outcome of matches aren't changing. No one's, you know, doing anything shady. When that does happen, by the way, when somebody, like, scoops to somebody for... well, basically when somebody bribes somebody, that's never good. But that's not really what we're talking about here. But like I said, it's kind of accepted among the Magic community, and I think Craig did kind of violate... those ungrounded rules a little bit. But the thing is, I don't think he had time to process it completely beforehand. Like, I think if he had had, you know, 5 minutes to think about everything and come to a conclusion, he wouldn't have made the same decision or acted the same way as he did. I think it was just a lapse of reason on his part, which he did admit to, and it was a lapse of reason on the other player's part, and I think both parties had some input that sent the situation into a negative area. And, I mean, it was dealt with the only way it really could be dealt with. But I don't think people should be upset at Craig in the long run just because, like, I don't think he'll be making the same mistake again. I don't think, like I said, I don't think this was a... It was conscious, but it wasn't, like, deliberated. And his opponent, obviously, nobody should be really mad at him because he was trying to have fun or whatever. We don't actually know if the bet was real or not. But regardless of whether it was... He basically just had a momentary lapse of reason, and I think the whole thing was kind of blown out of proportion. I would not suggest players do this in the future. I would suggest that is let people keep their... I mean, that's the one good thing about this coming to light, is that, like, now players kind of know how they're going to be treated if they do something like this. Like, Craig, this is the first time it's happened on a big scale. So, you know, I don't think in the future players are going to be, like, calling out their opponents on stupid little bets or whatever, unless the match is still going on or something like that. Then it's a different situation. But, you know, a little fun side bet after the match, just... let it be and move on.
But I mean, does this not change things? Like, you just mentioned these prop bets. I have never heard of this before. But the way I understand, there's all this discussion of these rules, those would be absolutely not acceptable if you look at how the rules are stated right now.
Prop bets?
Yeah, because you are betting on the outcome of a match.
Correct, but they're usually not on any one individual match. It's like... I mean, they're technically illegal by the DCI's point of view.
But doesn't that work? I guess now that things actually happened, is that, you know, in pros in general, are they worried? Or is this going to be more you guys police yourselves and just say, hey,
we police ourselves to the point that we don't really care if people do it. Like, you're not changing in the outcome of any match. You're not betting on a single match. Like, you know, the top eight comes, somebody might go, I'll give you 5-1 that Saito wins or whatever. Like, they're not saying... I mean, there's no malicious intent behind the bet, I guess is what I'm saying. So, like, you know, Saito doesn't know about the bet. These are two players way off in the corner making their own, you know, little thing, using their own money to do so. And, you know, no judges are around or whatever. I mean, it just happens. It's not like I said, I know it's technically illegal, but it's actually, in the long run, not affecting anyone in a negative way, except for the person that loses the bet, obviously, because they lost some money. So, I mean, I don't know. It's kind of like an underground thing. I don't really know how to describe it any better than that. Like, it's not going to stop. This will not stop anything. It will just make players maybe a little more cautious about when they say things, how they say it. I mean, there's a lot of jokes, like people walking around like, I bet you 50-1 you'll make a bet or something like that, just making jokes for the last week or whatever. But that'll all die down eventually, and things will go back to the way they were beforehand. And this has been going on since the beginning of Magic. It's nothing new, so...
And do you think any of the onus in this whole thing should go on the head judge who actually handed down that disqualification?
Not really. I mean, the guy made a direct line of thinking and actions that were supposed to be penalized. Like, he literally just directly disobeyed the rules. And so, I mean, he had to get... Once it was brought to the judge's attention, he had to go through with that ruling. But I think... Like I said, that's why he should have never said anything in the first place. But the judges really have nothing to do with this. Like, they have to... I mean, like, I don't know. Like,
kind of the way you're saying is that it sounds like these bets are happening all over the place. Have judges not overheard these in the past? I mean,
that
has to happen.
No, that's what I'm saying, is they don't usually hear them in the past. Or if they do, they just go, like, you guys quit talking about that here or whatever. Like, judges know about, for instance, the most common thing judges know about is money drafting. Like, there is not a single judge on the Pro Tour that doesn't know that people money draft.
Okay.
Basically, what they do is if you mention the words money draft in public, they'll be like, you're not allowed to draft for money. You know this. Either, you know, just keep that away from us or whatever. If you bust out money in the presence of a judge, for instance, they'll tell you to put it away, things like that, just because they don't want the Pro Tour.
Depends on how, that just means
that they all know what happens. They just don't want you to blatantly showcase that fact. But, you know, that's why a lot of people will be like, we're pride drafting or we're 3v3 drafting or whatever. They don't say the word money draft when they're actually around a judge. And the judges know that they're money drafting. They're not stupid. But, like, literally, it's your own money. You're betting on a side thing, not a non-sanctioned match. You know, usually your friends. Like, there's literally no harm done. So the judges don't really care too much because they're... It's I don't know. It's kind of like the you show up to your, you know, family reunion or whatever, and you're 19 years old, and your family lets you drink. Like, they understand it's technically illegal, but they're not going to say anything because you're not doing anything stupid, so.
And then, I'm feeling very stupid right now. Can you explain exactly what a money draft is? Maybe, so there might be some other people out there that also don't know what that is.
Money draft, the most common form, is a 3v3 draft. Usually, you pick your teams ahead of time. So, let's say I'll go get Luis and, I don't know, Paulo on my team. And then we'll draft against Gabe Walls, Brian Kibler, and Paul Reitzel or something like that. And you sit down in a six-person formation. No two team members are sitting next to each other, so you sit alternating or whatever. And you draft, and then you play against every member of the other team, and that'll total 9 matches. And the team that wins 5 or more matches wins, and each person puts up a certain amount of money. Usually $20 is the most common, but a lot of people do $50 or $100. And the winners of the team, the team that wins gets that amount of money from whoever they did. So, like, for instance, if I was betting against Gabe Walls, I could put $50 down, whereas Luis could bet $20 against Brian Kibler. So you don't have to do – the team doesn't have to bid universally. You can – as long as one person on the other team is willing to match, you can do any amount of money. And then the winning team gets their said money, plus they win all the cards from the draft.
Now, do you ever feel like this makes kind of another barrier to kind of getting into the Pro Tour where – it sounds like there are these unwritten rules. Like, how does one learn these unwritten rules? Like, I show up for my first big PT Pro Tour tournament for whatever reason.
If you're showing up for your first big PT and you've literally never been to a Grand... This happens in Grand Prix, too.
Okay.
If you've never seen this happen or whatever, you probably should not get involved with it, your first Pro Tour. Focus on the Pro Tour first. That's what matters. But this is literally just friends hanging out, having a good time afterwards, and we're gamers, so we put money on the line. Like, we go out to dinner, we do the credit card game. Like, we literally...
I don't do this. This is why it's very interesting to me.
I know, but, like, everything is a competition. Like, it's just that you want to win at everything. That's the gamer mentality. You're just very competitive. So it really has nothing to do with, like, it's not like we're, you know, doing this to make a living or whatever. It's just you put down a friendly wager and make the draft worth something. And if you think about this, you're doing this at F&M, right? You're putting in $13 in F&M, and the winner gets packs. Like, it's the exact same thing, except instead of packs, we're just giving away money to the other team. Like, the judges would actually probably not care if you sat down and say, I wager 3 packs against your 3 packs or whatever, because that's effectively just a trade, and you're allowed to trade cards for cards. But instead of doing that, we're just giving a more universal currency, in this case, money. And so, I mean, it's a part of the culture of the Pro Tour community. And once you've done it once, you get integrated. Like, most of the time, you're not drafting against 3 other big name pros or whatever. It'll usually be like 1 or 2 big pros per draft, sometimes more. And then, like, some of their friends, most of my friends that play Magic aren't necessarily big pro name players. Like, I do have a lot of big pro name players that are my friends. But, you know, I got people that no one's ever heard of that draft with me or whatever. And as long as I'm confident in their skills, you know, I'm fine with them playing with me. So, I mean, it's not like these are just strictly reserved for the level 8 pros and stuff higher. So, I mean, I don't know. It got blown out of proportion, I think. I mean, this just is part of the culture of Magic. It's part of the culture of gaming in general. And we just happen to be the more competitive gamers since we do this for a living, most of us. And I don't know. I don't think it's no harm, no foul in the long run.
Okay. That's interesting. I didn't know about, I guess, kind of the... I've heard you talk about kind of the betting culture, but I've never heard it that frankly that this is happening all over the place. Like, this is not weird.
I mean, have you ever watched, like, are you familiar with any poker or anything like that?
To be honest, no, I don't really watch any, like, poker or blackjack or anything like that.
Okay, well, I mean, if you watch, like something like Poker After Dark, for instance, which tonight on NBC, Dave Williams will be on all week, by the way. So if you're interested in that kind of thing, Dave Williams is a really cool guy. He promotes Magic, usually talks about it pretty vigorously on any poker things that he does on TV or whatever. So you'll probably see some Magic talk over the 5 days. Poker After Dark basically is a they go in, they play one tournament, but it's broken down into 5 episodes and aired all week long. And it's kind of like a casual 9-person tournament. But through Poker After Dark, like, when you're watching it, these people are making prop bets all the time. Prop bets is just, like, basically a side bet on something stupid. So, like, you know, they'll bet, they'll do this game called, like, I guess it's Anybody Thinks. It's basically, if you don't want to throw out a name, basically, like, you, I don't know, I'm not going to describe the game. Basically, you wager on some stupid thing about, like, what somebody thinks something is. So it's like, what is Phil think that the population of Dairy Queen is at this moment or whatever.
Oh, just like, does Conley know what piles is? Like, that's
No, but it's not actually no. So, like, basically, like...
Sorry, guys, so I gotta answer the phone.
I'd go, hey, Jack, or I'd go, hey, Tom, think in your head about how long you think the average living room in the country is. It doesn't actually matter how long the average living room in the country is, it's just whatever you think. And you think that to yourself and, like, write it down, and then Jack and I would bet to on what number we think you thought of. It actually doesn't matter.
It's
how
like you're basically playing Family Feud.
In the country is just matters of what you thought the number is. And so Jack and I would bet back and forth to see. Like I would set the line at like 5 feet, and then he would go, "No, I think it's 7 feet." And then I would go, "No, 9 feet," and he'd go, "No, all right, call." So that basically, if it's, you know, 9 feet roughly or whatever, then I would win the bet, and if it's not, Jack would win the bet. But like, this like literally happens all the time on Poker After Dark or any poker tournament. They just do it for fun because, you know, they're sitting around playing poker and the hands take a while or whatever and they want something to do. And that kind of thing happens in Magic all the time. It's literally just the personalities and the mentality of the players. We're not like Pete Rose where we're like playing in a game and like, I bet you I'll lose this match, and then we throw the matches. I'm like, hey, that never happens.
No, I bet I can really lose this match. Like the best losing you've ever seen.
What?
Pete Rose was a master at that.
Yeah, but I mean, he was actually affecting the outcome of any
game. He was throwing games to fix. Yeah, he was fixing.
And that does not happen in Magic. Like, I've never, ever encountered a situation where somebody has bet on themselves, other than to win, obviously. But I've never seen anyone bet on themselves to lose, either publicly or privately. And then that happens. So, I mean, it's never anything that affects the outcome of any given tournament.
I'm still imagining Richard Karn wanting to get in on this side bets that they have in the poker thing. It sounds just like a much more exciting version of Family Feud.
Kind of, basically, yeah.
All right, Jack, is there any of the other Magic news this week that you wanted to bring up? We have a little bit of selection of other stuff.
Well, I mean, people are always salivating for any new information about new upcoming sets, so why don't we talk a little bit about the Mirrodin Besieged and steel ourselves for the upcoming war?
Tell me more about the set with the logo that's saying there's going to be poison.
First of all, I think we can all agree that we're all going to be calling this set Mirrodin BS pretty soon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it looks like somebody pooped on the logo.
Or just dragged it through the mud. And I mean, like, this is such a dirty, dirty logo. But anyways, okay.
Dirty logo.
Bad logo. Bad.
Dirty.
Yeah, Mirrodin Besieged. Set name, Mirrodin Besieged. It's going to be the numero dos in the upcoming Scars of Mirrodin block. It's called MBS.
I don't speak Spanish.
Okay, well, it's going to be a second in the Scars of Mirrodin
block. Oh, I got you now.
Deuce.
It's going to have 155 cards in it. The release date is February 4th, so, you know, guys, ditch the date for that upcoming weekend because you've got Magic to buy. And what's going to be worth more to you, a date or Magic?
Depends on who you're asking.
What about a date where you play Magic?
My wife's in bed, so the answer is Magic.
All right, well, the pre-release date is January 29th through the 30th. The launch parties, which are what people are actually concerned about usually, is February 4th through the 7th. And you got a while to prepare for that, so steel yourself for war and all that bullcrap.
So, Conley, are you excited for the return of Mirrodin, or
any powerful cards that... Any potential powerful cards I'm excited for. I like building with powerful cards, naturally. Luckily, in the last year, we've gotten one of the top 5 most powerful cards of all time in Jace the Mind Sculptor, so that one's held me off for a while. But I'm pretty sure I'll need a new fix come around January.
All right, yes. I mean, the logo, to me, looks pretty mundane. I guess it doesn't... It really looks like they just dipped it in butterscotch. I mean, they took me to the dipped it in the stuff at Dairy Queen, and let it dry.
Yeah, but I mean, at the same time, though, you have to think about Mirrodin is a metallic universe, so there wouldn't really be a lot of color there, unless like they suddenly just struck themselves a fancy with fashion and decided to make the whole place just coordinated.
Just make it like a double rainbow or something like that?
Double rainbow.
I will say the only magic novels I've read, completely at least, have been the Mirrodin set. I read all three of them, and I actually enjoyed them. I thought there was a pretty good storyline, and you kind of actually fall in love with like the characters like Slow Bad and stuff, and it'd be interesting to see if they bring any of those back. Maybe we'll have
so you fell in love with a goblin? Did I just hear you say that?
He's a cool little dude. You like Tom wish he was your friend.
Slow Bad.
All I'm saying is showtime. in the novels he becomes a planeswalker, so maybe we'll get a Slow Bad planeswalker card and finally be able to ditch Chandra because her cards have not been living up to hype.
I guess that's true. Those are by far the least played planeswalkers. If you had to.
Well, I mean, the Chandra Blaze has seen zero play except for my dumbass that played at the Pro Tour, and Chandra Nalar was good for a while, especially when like Stuffy Doll was around. But her time has come and gone, and now there are better red answers to Baneslayer Angel.
Now, Conley, do you think Karn's going to be coming back? Speaking of very popular magic-related characters.
He could. He was definitely involved in the first novels. He's the one that created the world, basically, from Memnarch to Libon. And run. And I do think a colorless planeswalker is possible. I have designed one before in my set that I always talk about and have yet to ever publish on MTGcast because I'm lazy. But I definitely think a colorless planeswalker is possible and would be cool. The planeswalker itself would probably not be an artifact because having an artifact planeswalker seems a little weird, but you never know. But having a colorless planeswalker is basically like an artifact, and then have it artifact-centric, kind of like a Tezzeret, but in a different style. So like instead of searching for artifacts, maybe it like puts a 1/1 artifact creature into play that sacrifices for a mana, and then like, you know, having another one that I don't know, I can't think of anything off the top of my head, but you know, having something that that impacts artifacts makes it effectively an artifact without having to put artifact planeswalker as its type line.
And then kind of related to this is for the Scars of Mirrodin set that'll be coming out pretty soon, is there's all this weird talk about the affiliated decks and this integrated consumer experience. Have you guys read about this, about the different watermarks that are seemingly going to be appearing on the cards? Kind of versus
no.
Mirrodin versus Phyrexia, and their people...
Oh, yeah. So how it's going to be two sets within one...
Yeah, and how they theorize it almost might be this new sort of... At least that maybe the releases, or maybe like a new format that people can make a deck out of just cards with that watermark on them.
Well, I will say I am skeptical of this, but every other time that some weird thing, like when the time-shifted announcement came out as a rumor or whatever, that ended up being true, and then the Hidden Treasures came out, like that seemed like a far-fetched idea, then that ended up being true. So, I mean, the people that... There's got to be some basis to this. We don't know where or what, but it seems plausible. Like, I don't know how they would pull it off, but... Like, especially sealed, I guess, is the big thing. I don't know if you get three of each pack. Like, in the pre-release, especially, they're claiming that you would get one of the two factions. But at a Grand Prix, for instance, like, that would definitely... That would make the playing field not equal, which you can't have. So it'd be interesting to see if you get, like, three of each pack or something like that. Or, I don't know how to pull it off, I guess. I mean, Jack might have better ideas than I do.
Well, what worries me about this is, say, they have... Whatever somehow happens, there's the next Jace the Mind Sculptor, and it's in that one faction. Also, you have half the box just sitting there languishing.
I'm not too worried about that. I feel like they'll make sure that they have a high power card in both sets, so that way one does not get outbought by the other one. And regardless, at that point, Wizards wouldn't even care because if they're put half and half in a box, they're still selling the boxes, right? Like.
I just imagine, it seems like to me your local game store retailers might get a little pissed that they have half a box of that one other pack left.
I guess, maybe.
But otherwise, I agree, though, that if by doing this with the watermark on the front of the card is that if you don't want to use it, you don't have to and it doesn't affect anything. Or you can use it if you want. If you don't, you just kick it to the curb. It doesn't affect your game at all.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure it would be like the guild symbols from Ravnica, like how they have them in the text box.
Yeah.
And like, if you choose to ignore them, you just ignore them.
So I think that's pretty cool, where you can make it a big part of the flavor if you want, but if you don't care, you're just looking for the powerful cards, you don't have to use it, and everybody's happy. For you, Jack, did you have any kind of thoughts about this? As it is a weird theory. It does kind of... It tickles that part of the back of your brain where, like, I don't know if this is a good idea.
Well, I mean, Wizards is known for pulling out just odd mechanics and cool new concepts on older things like the watermarks and stuff like that. I think, just technically speaking, it's going to be purely a artistic merit kind of thing. Because Mark Rosewater is known for just dropping little hints all over the place and making the rumor mill writhe. That being said, I mean, if they did use it as a mechanic, I don't think it would be some kind of, like you were describing, where you have, like, half the pack is this faction, the other half is this faction or whatever. I think it would be more of a, like, well, if you have Blah Watermark, it gets a +1/+1, or, like, for so many cards you have that have Blah Watermark, you gain one life, or something like that, I think is how they would approach it. They try to avoid the more, I guess, lopsided mechanics now, because the dev team's kind of got that down to a fine art. But, I mean, other than that, I think it's really just going to be purely, you can appreciate it from an artistic standpoint.
Okay. Let's see what else we got, guys. We also have, I mean, you missed it last week, Emily. There's national championships all over the place.
Yep.
As a pro, do you even try to keep track of this, or do you just kind of be like, hey, that's cool?
I check out the deck lists that do well.
Okay.
Mainly because our national championship's coming up, and I need as much information as possible. Regardless of whether I'm playing one of those decks or an offshoot of one of those decks, I need to know what other people are playing, and there is a very few places to get legitimate tournament-worthy decks to put in a gauntlet than from the actual list of other top eights. Some of these you have to put less emphasis on than other ones, like nationals in Cuba or, you know, some weird place like that. It's not going to be as reliable as, like, say, Spanish or French nationals, but they all have some merit somewhere. So,
anything that has jumped out of these out of the recent nationals that seemed interesting for deck lists or surprised you at all?
Are you including all the nationals that have happened so far, or literally the last, like, 2 weeks of them?
All of them. We've just read off who's won. That's all I've done.
Well, I mean, yes, like, the blue-white control is back with the Fury. It dominated French Nationals 3/4. The top eight decks were blue-white control with Sun Titan. He's insane. That will definitely see a lot of play at our Nationals. The Destructive Force decks got some more validation. Fauna Shaman decks got more validation. There's some other obscure decks in there, some Bant-style decks, things like that. Definitely a lot of lists that have come out of these Nationals that help give us a more clear picture going into our own Nationals.
All right, what else do we got, guys? I think, I guess we have the Friday Night Magic September Pro Bowl will be the Kosali Pride Mage.
Good one.
Which is an excellent card. I mean, nobody's going to complain about that one.
It's very hot. I like the art.
Except for those players playing Mistress Workshops.
Like, I remember when that set came out and you saw the card and you didn't think, you knew it was kind of good, but nobody really played with Mistress Workshop when it first came out.
I mean,
you know, I just now noticed that this is a cat wizard. Does that strike anybody else as a little weird?
I thought it was a cat warrior. It's a cat wizard?
Yeah. It's right there on the card. Yes,
that.
It's a wizard. That is so strange.
I don't get the wizard vibe from that. You are right. It is a cat wizard. I had never noticed that. That's one of the more unwizardy creatures I've ever seen in my life.
Tom has a cat wizard.
I do. My cat is just sitting on the floor right now looking at the floor.
No, he's actually conjuring a spell.
I don't think so. I think he's just sitting there on the wall in the wind. It looks like the Great Wall of China.
That's because he misused the sleep spell on himself.
he gave himself narcolepsy.
Don't ever underestimate the powers of the cat wizard, Tom.
Of the cat wizard. And mice wizards and everybody else.
He might be the one that took out the other cat. Maybe he was experimenting. Maybe he was like, turn that cat into a frog and it didn't work.
Maybe he bet he could cast a spell on himself and he did. And he won that bet.
But one funny thing. So in Hano, or I'll avoid this aside. Act like I never said anything. Edit this part of the show out for all you want. You listeners that right now are curious about what I was about to say, just forget about it. Amnesia has come upon you.
What?
And I will send cat wizards to remove all of your memories. Go.
You can't do that and then not tell the story.
It was going to be too long, and I was going to have to set up too much backstory, and it was going to be 20 minutes of me talking, and nobody wants that.
Can we do it at the end? Because if people don't want to listen to, they don't have to?
Sure.
Okay. I think that's all. Do you guys want to hear about
what?
This?
I think that's the end. No.
Well, no. Do you guys want to hear about this Darkspore game or not? I put it on there. I stumbled upon this by listening to other video game podcasts.
That's all.
I could care less.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll skip it. If anybody wants to email me, if you want to hear about Darkspore, it's going to be the sequel to Spore. It has the lead designer from Magic, who had done Magic's in the Back, Luke Harrington. Let me know. Because there's going to be some magic in your video game. So
I'm going to create a game called Dark Core, and it's a pimple popping game. You try to pop blackheads.
Yeah, we get the blackheads.
Dark Core.
Yeah, but then the blackheads all have different factions, right? And then you'll have to follow a very comprehensive tech tree, so your pimples are more advanced than their pimples.
And then the overlords would be the white heads, of course.
Yeah, am I the only person that kind of enjoys the occasional blackhead where you get a feeling of accomplishment when you finally get to come out?
I've never actually gotten a blackhead.
Never have? I mean,
I get whiteheads all the time because I'm a large individual, and what?
Are you not using the baby powder on your face then? Is that the problem?
No, that gives you more, doesn't it? Doesn't it clog up your pores? That's how I eat.
I don't know. I've never tried it.
Welcome to the beauty section of the show, folks, where we give out our very wonderful tips.
Are you exfoliating properly?
Well, I have to use, as I've mentioned a million times, and everybody's very disgusted at hearing, I have psoriasis, so I have to use different types of lotion, and sometimes a new lotion that I'll get or whatever will clog up my pores and give me annoying whiteheads.
That sucks, because I have had acne for a long time, and it's...
No, I don't have acne. My face is fine. I got no acne there. Oh. I mean, I get around the edge of the back of my neck where I wear hats sometimes. I don't wear hats very often. I think it happens to everybody.
I just get straight up normal acne. And like when you hit like 30, you're like, I shouldn't be having this anymore, but I am.
I get leg acne, like heat rashes and stuff.
Leg acne. Ooh, the scourge of the 21st century. Acne.
Acne exists, right? Like back knee. So
I've heard of acne. I've never heard of leg acne.
I get it on my upper arms and my legs are the two most common places I get it.
And people know guys can get that also on their genitalia. I have seen more than one person in clinic who came and thought they had an STD because they had a pimple in a certain place.
I've never gotten a pimple down there. I have had a tick on my genitalia.
Really? Did you burn it off still, or how'd you...
Exactly. I burned it off, and it hurt like mother.
Very carefully.
It took me like 2 hours to muster up the courage to even burn it off. So this tick got.
It took you 10 minutes to light the cigarette, and then 2 seconds to burn it off.
No, it wasn't a cigarette; it was a lighter. And that was the problem: is that I.
Did you use an open flame on it?
Yes, I used an open flame on it.
That's a man right there.
That is the manliest thing I've heard this week. I got the tick off. I took it off with a lighter.
It was painful. I didn't know what it was. I mean, you know, you lay down in bed and you kind of adjust yourself, and I felt this thing, and I got up, and I thought for sure that I had gotten a tumor on my balls, and it turned out to be a tick, which was the second most scariest thing.
Oh, I'll have a great, disgusting story after the show is done.
Oh, I'm liking where we're going right now, guys. I'm liking this.
We're going to the moon.
All right, guys. Well, we're going to get into what you've been playing. And was there any other magic news before we move on?
No.
No more.
Actually...
Balls, ticks, whatever you got.
I guess I got no magic news. I was going to say, everyone check out Ascension, which is Brian Kibler, and I guess the company currently is called Gary Games, but they're going to be changing it. But it's a bunch of former Magic players that kind of came together and developed this game Ascension. And Brian Kibler was demoing it at Gen Con, and I didn't personally get to play it, but I watched some other people play it. It looked pretty cool. It's kind of like a Dominion, if anyone's ever played Dominion.
Oh, so it's like a non-collectible card game?
It's exactly a non-collectible card game. There's a board involved with that kind of maps out everything for you, and then there's a lot of cards, and they'll, of course, be releasing new sets and everything. And it's
you can buy packs of new sets and trade those with your friends.
There are no packs. It basically will come probably in box sets, but maybe, yeah. But it's less skilled than Magic. There's a lot more luck involved, which is kind of nice for the Magic player that kind of wants a break. And it looked pretty sweet, and he demoed it, and I think they go on sale at the end of the month. So,
well, I mean, if you can somehow capture even part of that Magic of Dominion, that game is phenomenal. So
yeah, it's very, very Dominion-esque. You do buy things, you kind of create your deck, that kind of style.
Okay, very cool. And so this part, I mean, we heard a lot about this is what you've been playing part of the show. Conley, you've told us a lot about what you've been playing for the last couple weeks here. Jack, how about you?
Well, actually, recently, I didn't get into a lot of time to actually enjoy EDH this weekend because I actually went to Tennessee to see some family. But I've been working a lot on my Shroom deck, trying to enhance it a little bit. And finally, like, I picked up some cards I've been looking for 3 years. Like, I'm probably one of three people in the world that does not order things on the internet. So, like, it's more fun for me to kind of quest around and try and find the cards I need for my deck, right? So, I actually was running the Future Sight, Sensei's Divining Top, and Artifact Cost Reducer combo in my deck where you just draw your entire deck and then kill them with Brain Freeze, right?
That would be a Helm, by the way.
Helm. Oh, yeah, yes. Yeah. Yeah. No, actually...
No, not Obedience. Helm of Obedience is the mill card. It's Helm of Awakening.
Oh, that's what I think of. Sorry.
Or you can also use, combo, like, Go ahead.
Yeah, you can use Ethereum Sculptor. The combo is affectionately called Sensei, by the way, for anybody that doesn't know.
Okay, I did. Well, so thank you.
I learned something new today. But anyway, so yeah, I was running the Sensei-Sensei combo, but the problem is, in my playgroup, people are starting to use the Eldrazi that reshuffles your graveyard whenever it hits, right? So that combo was coming a lot less effective, so I picked up a Yawgmoth's Will and a couple of other cards that I just, like, never in a million years thought I would own. So I've taken the combo out, and I actually put this up on my Twitter feed the other day. Like, I'm not really running any combos in the deck other than Buried Alive into Magister Sphinx to win the game on my upkeep, or win the game on my next combat step. And, like, a lot of people out there are running several different combos in Shroom. They're using, like, Basalt Monolith and Power Artifact to get infinite mana and stuff like that. I've actually shifted to a more control-focused deck, which to me is more appealing because, like, my Shroom deck can actually handle one-on-one and multiplayer fairly well on its own. I'm also going and I grabbed a Dream Halls while I was out, and I'm building Azami again, which that's going to be tremendously fun. Other than that, I have not actually been playing much Magic this week.
Can I give you a combo that you might enjoy playing in said deck?
By all means, Conley.
Temple Bell plus Mind Over Matter.
See, that's the only thing. I have to get a hold of a Mind Over Matter, and that's going to be fun. I'll probably have to end up ordering that.
It's like $5 or something, but you basically throw one Eldrazi in your deck, in your EDH deck, and you play a Mind Over Matter or Temple Bell first or whatever, and then you literally just force each player
to draw them out.
Yeah, you make them draw cards, and then you eventually discard an Emrakul or something to your Mind Over Matter and shuffle your graveyard in. And Mind Over Matter has uses other than the combo, as does Temple Bell, so they're both two combo pieces that are fine on their own. The Sensei-Sensei combo is also good. That one saw a vintage play. The Mind Over Matter, people tried running for Legacy, but it really didn't take off because you're trying to resolve a 6-mana enchantment that costs blue, and a 3-mana artifact. So there's a little awkward, but both are pretty fun combos for EDH because they're not, like, degenerate to the point where everyone's, like, sad. Plus, if anybody has an answer, like a wipe away or something in their deck, then they can actually, like, draw into it. So it's not like it just automatically wins. Everyone's just going to be happy drawing a bunch of cards till they get their answer.
That is actually really cool. I'm going to try that out. Thank you very much, Conley.
Well, you're welcome.
And I actually have two. I have a request and then an update from next week. Is this upcoming weekend is game day. M11 game day. And, of course, if you've been listening, if you get top 8, you get a prize, which is a full art Mitotic Slime, which I really want. So I need help.
I still have to send you your angel, by the way.
Yes, I'm still waiting.
Have you been collecting Mitotic Ooze Slime tokens?
I've been trying to get as many as I can.
Okay.
Because you actually have multiple different types, which is kind of irritating. But
it's true, but they're both comical because they have, like, one has text on it. It's like one of the few tokens that has, like, a block of text.
Yeah, it looks weird, doesn't it? It just doesn't look right.
But it's cool that, like, if you look at the three progressions of it, they all look like they come from the same creature and stuff. And I actually have a couple of foil Mitotic Slimes at home that I forgot to bring, and I'm ashamed of now.
Ooh, why? I want those. So I want help as I need to have a standard deck to take to game day. I'm not looking to win. I would like to try to make top 8, though. So I'm asking you as my co-host, maybe you as the listeners, if you have any ideas. And, of course, this is going to be more on the budget side, too. And I know...
When is game day again?
This upcoming weekend.
Ooh.
I want to say mono blue, because that could be a lot of fun. And very budgety with, what is it, Conundrum Sphinx?
There's that. I mean, I saw there's that mono black discard deck that actually did pretty well at a couple of places, just... And pretty much I have all of those cards already.
Yeah, you can play the Dueling Megrims deck.
Yeah, that's the one I was talking about, because that one
It's blue-black, or it's red-black.
So, I guess I only saw a mono-black. What is the Dueling Megrims deck, then?
It runs Liliana's Caress, as well as Megrim, so it runs 8 Megrim effects.
Yep.
And then it runs, like, Burning Inquiry, which is draw 3, discard 3 at random, so it triggers both those cards, and it does it from an empty hand, which is one problem with the discard strategy, is that when you have no hand, you're no longer taking damage from Megrim. So it runs Burning Inquiry, which is a good card in the deck, as well as a few other burn spells, like Lightning Bolt and possibly Searing Blaze, I don't remember. And a couple other spells that make you... I can't remember exactly every card in the deck. I could find it. It actually top-aided a Nationals. So.
That's where I think they had that on the Mothership site, you know, for kind of
interesting
deck of the day.
Exactly.
And that one I like because I pretty much could make it out of my common-uncommon set from M11.
Yeah, it's pretty cheap, and it'll catch a lot of players off guard if they're playing Destructive Force or Blue-White, since it theoretically beats both those decks.
Okay, so that may be what I tried out, just because it sounds like it's fairly straightforward to play. I'm either burning them or making them discard, and hopefully we'll then win.
Exactly.
And the update is, everybody seemed to really like my EDH deck from last week, the Mathematician's Wet Dream.
I didn't see this deck, and I feel bad.
Yes, yeah, so if you go back to last show notes, I have a link to TCG Player where I actually typed in the whole deck list. And I have that as my ongoing. And actually, I forgot about Trinisphere, so I appreciate you telling me about that, because that's another card to put in this deck.
Well, so what is the overall point of the deck?
White, blue, black. The whole point of this deck is to make it so confusing when you play a spell that your opponent doesn't want to. It has
so
every
Nether Voids and stuff?
Yep, has... Here, I will pull up the card list. I even have a couple of updates. So, really putting me on the spot here. I gotta try to pull up the old Shono.
Is it just to alter cards, or is it always to make them more expensive?
Always to make them more expensive.
Okay, so you're not gonna run Helm of Awakening, but you have, like, Sphere of Resistance, Thorn of Amethyst, Yellow Rider.
And I threw in stuff like Benevolent Unicorn just to throw off combat math. Yeah, Glow Rider, Grand Arbiter.
What's the 6-mana artifact that makes creatures cost 2 more?
Pharaoh's Band.
Yep, you got that one.
Yep, that is in there. Yep, Pharaoh's Band, Lodestone Golem, of course. If everybody's been listening last week, I apologize. Collective Restraint. You've got Ghost Prison, Propaganda. Oh boy, there's so much stuff. Nether Void, luckily I already had one, so I did not have to buy one. For everybody that wrote in saying, don't get that card. Sphere of Resistance Squeeze, which is one that I was personally a fan of.
Do you have a... What's it called? The card that makes all basic lands into other basic lands?
Which one is that?
Enchantment. I'm going to have to go look for it.
I'm thinking Reality Twist or something, but I don't think that's what you're talking about.
What is Reality Twist?
That was one that has, like, a crazy cumulative of, like, 2 blue and a colorless, and lands produce different colors, and...
No, here, let me see. I will look it up, and you can continue the show, and it basically turns every land type into a different land type. So it's like mountains are plains are forests, forests are swamps are whatever. It's kind of funny.
And then the couple ones I've discovered from people emailing in is Magus of the Tabernacle. I also remember Tabernacle Pendril Veil, and then nearly passed a stone when I saw how much that card cost today. Jack, without looking it up, do you know how much Tabernacle Pendril Veil is going for these days?
Oh, God. Okay, I want to say it was $200 when I was actually considering building stacks. A long, long time ago when I had much more money before I enrolled in college. But it's probably, with the rise of popularity and legacy, probably $300 to $400, I want to say.
You're right, yes. I mean, it's like kind of high 200s, low 300s, depending on where you're looking. And this, it blew my mind. I don't follow, legacy and vintage that much. And I still remember when these cards were like $10 for Tabernacles. I mean, people had them, but... They were kind of good, but, nobody really played with them ever. So I thought, I'll just go get a Tabernacle for, like, $25 and throw it in here. I'm like, ugh! And then I'm looking, there's Magus of the Tabernacle, which, does the same thing on a 2-6 body. You have Pendril Mists, which is an enchantment from Mass that does pretty much the exact same thing as an enchantment. So there's some nice budget ways to get the same effect without having to spend $280 on one land that doesn't give you mana.
All right, so far I'm only coming up with Reality Twist, but I don't think that's it.
And then the other one I also like that I think would just make people mad that doesn't necessarily change math, but is Peacekeeper. So people just can't even attack.
I do love me some Peacekeeper. I've played it before in other decks.
So that is the kind of constantly evolving EDH deck, but I do want to put together another one, because I had such a blast making the white-blue-black one. I'm really thinking, just to keep it interesting, I'm going to make a red-green. So do you guys, off the top of your head, like, have any favorite generals for red-green that might be a good place to start? Before I just
play Ward and do land destruction. Lots and lots of land destruction.
That doesn't sound fun at all.
It's so much fun, especially when you blow up everybody else's lands except your own, and then you play a Terastodon, right? And you blow up 3 of your own forest.
I also like the, he's the 4-4 for 5 when he attack, or like when anything attacks with trample, it gets +2/+2 or something like that.
It's like a big centaur dude, isn't it?
Yeah. I've run him before. He's fun. And then the other deck is the Roisin Meanderer.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
That taps for 4 mana for X spells or whatever, and then you just get to jam your deck full of like mana acceleration and X spells. It's pretty fun.
Okay, that sounds good. So I want to put together a red-green EDH deck now, and hopefully have a little different flavor than the Mathematician's Wet Dream. And also want to give credit to a specific listener. I'm actually going to say the name here, because he sent in a very cool thing for me. This was Paul Covell. Actually sent in a PDF of like a printable playmat where it has a zone for each type of spell so I can keep track of how much extra it costs for my opponent for each spell that they cast. Like, you just put counters in a little different zone so if they know if they're trying to cast a creature spell, it's going to cost 8 more mana or whatever it is. So I thought that was very cool that he actually made something and then sent me a copy of that so I could use it. So thank you, Paul. And that is what I've been playing, guys. Do you have any emails you want to talk about when we transition to our email section?
Big shout out to all the folks that want me to add them on my Steam account for Team Fortress 2. I haven't gotten around to it yet, simply because I've not been near my gaming rig. Another shout out to Thorn. I have a lot of fun talking to him about the proper rules of English, which I so rarely demonstrate. So keep the emails coming, guys. I really appreciate them.
Now, Jack, did you want at all to address your critic from the last episode?
No, I mean, I think I have succulently addressed the sound of my own voice sounding like nails on a chalkboard. I mean, you know, it's no big deal. It's like the guy said, he even wrote that he thought that I was probably a nice person, but that I had a very droning, annoying, obnoxious voice on the cast, which, I mean, that's cool. I don't care. You know, it's everybody's a critic, and everybody's got their opinion, so whatever, man.
All right, guys, we'll go through these real quick here for me. Paul D, he writes in, he loves Stormtide Leviathan. He wonders why it isn't a mythic. I had to look up Stormtide Leviathan. I didn't remember it.
That card is cool.
It's pretty good, actually. I was surprised.
It's pretty good. I advocated it in a polymorph strategy that you grab Terastodons and you blow up most of your opponent's lands, save one, Sidewalk, and then give them a bunch of guys, and then you just bash through your 8/8.
Oh, okay, because they can't attack you because you basically have an island sanctuary with legs that can attack with Island Walk.
Correct. And then also sees play in some reanimator decks in Legacy as a different Blazing Archon that is bad against Merfolk but good against other decks because it's a faster clock.
Okay. And in response, we had a listener email in last week about he's just gotten some new power cards, like Power 9 cards, and how best to play with them. Should he play with them, use sleeves, what's going on?
Okay, go ahead.
Well, the question is, like, if you have power, do you play them? Do you leave them in your trade binder? If you play a piece of power in sleeves, is it going to get damaged over time? You know, how best to use those power cards that are worth so much money these days?
Well, as I play Vintage, I have some hints here.
Okay, go ahead.
One, for any casual format, if you're actually, I assume you're trying to preserve your card to get it damaged the least.
Yeah.
So, rule number one is if you're playing just in a casual format, such as EDH or whatever, and you don't actually want to play with your power, I would just print off proxies that are look exactly like power and put them in front of a sleeve or whatever, or draw your own. I've actually drawn up all my own power. I have full art like pictures that I made up myself look pretty sweet. So that's one option you can go with. If you actually do want to play with your power, the first thing to do is go invest in some Perfect Fits. They are a sleeve made by KMC. They're the only people I know that make them. You get 100 of them in a pack, and it's like $3 or whatever. And these are basically super small sleeves that literally fit a card exactly to its edges and no more, so there's no excess. And you put the card in. So let's say you put the... Let's for instance, say you have a card with power and toughness or whatever. Power and toughness usually goes into the bottom of a sleeve. For a perfect fit, you put the card in upside down, and then you turn the card and put it in right side up into a normal sleeve. So, like, the perfect fits actually go around the card, and then the card inside the perfect fit goes into another sleeve. So each card you have is effectively double-sleeved. It makes your decks a little bit bigger, obviously, but it keeps them from, for instance...
Kind of like peeking out the top or something like that.
No, they don't peek out the top. They fit in perfectly.
Oh, but I mean, if you weren't using the double bag.
Yes. If you didn't turn them upside down, they might do that.
Okay.
But you're turning upside down. Don't ever riffle shuffle power. It's just a bad idea. Just always use pile shuffling. Make sure you pile shuffle vigorously and do side shuffles. Just holding it and dropping cards into the side of it or whatever. But don't ever riffle shuffle because you'll get the bend marks on your cards, and that's just a bad habit to get into. And if you play Vintage, for instance, it's very bad etiquette to ever riffle shuffle an opponent's deck. I think it happens. People will punch you.
What happened if I brought like one of those like battery powered card shufflers that I use for like Pinochle, where you put the two stacks and goes rah, and it just
those have like been known to eat cards, so you will literally probably just get shot.
So I should just bring it with, not to actually use it, but to see what's, just have it off to the side.
Yeah. But, so, for instance, in EDH decks, you can't use power anyway, so it's kind of irrelevant. But any other type of casual format, if you do want to play with your power, definitely double sleeve them. Some people go to the extent of triple sleeving them, so you have to buy oversized sleeves, which do exist. I wouldn't go that far because it's very difficult to shuffle, and any 60-card deck actually feels like a 110-card deck. It's bigger than an EDH deck, and it's pretty difficult to shuffle doing side shuffles, so you almost only can pile shuffle them. So it takes a little bit longer, but I would definitely invest in some perfect hits. Like I said, they're cheap. They're like $3, and That way, you know, your cards stay pretty much intact. And the thing is, the perfect fits don't get dirty like regular sleeves since they're inside of another sleeve. So you can use them for, you know, 6 months or whatever before you have to change them. So you just leave your card in there at all times, and then you re-sleeve it as normal. But the perfect fit stays nice and clean. So it's a pretty good investment. I would definitely suggest doing that.
Okay, very cool. And Jim kind of, he wrote in something similar to you saying he had used some, you know, valuable cards over the past 10 to 15 years and just normal sleeves, and it had seemed like they had gotten some damage. So I think he would agree.
Yeah, if you just use single sleeves, then you're probably in trouble.
And he also, Jim also admits that he joined the Pen 15 Club as a kid.
I still don't know what this Pen 15 Club is.
Okay, we'll fill you in on it. So basically what you do is you have, like we were doing before the show, you have somebody get a pen, and to join the club you have to write the word Pen 15 on the back of your hand. If you were to write that on a piece of paper, Pen 15 looks like a different word.
Oh, I got it.
Yep.
Okay.
Only takes one time.
So that's the... Would you guys want to join Sandwich Punch?
Probably not.
That sounds slightly homoerotic. I'm good.
No, it's one of the greatest games ever, but the problem is once you know the rules, you play for life. There's no backing out. So if you ever ask somebody to know the rules of Sandwich Punch and they know the rules and they tell you, you play for life. It's actually a very fun game. I can't give any more information than that. But if anyone ever wants to know the rules to Sandwich Punch, send me an email. I'll work on a document or whatever and send you the information. It's a commonly played game among vintage tournaments and stuff like that. And it's fun, but it's intense.
Yeah, I'm scared now. Let's see. Jason Koss, he sends an eulogy for his local game store in Oakland called Collector's Corner that recently closed. So, you gotta feel bad about that.
Goodbye, Collector's Corner.
Let's see, Martin from New Zealand, he felt that last week we were very off base with our analysis of the Wesco poll debacle. I think we've beaten that to death. We're not going to talk about it anymore.
Did he have any input on it or no?
Basically just said, his one thing is he did an interesting story that he and his son were disqualified from a GP for having a bet that one who won the least number of games would buy dinner. And they said they were disqualified because that was considered a bet.
Yeah, I've gotten a game loss before because I bet a friend $1 that if we mulligan to zero each in the third game of an F&M, I would be the first one to draw a land. And I got a game loss and lost the match.
That one I can see because you are kind of almost throwing a match.
No. We'd already mulliganed to zero. It was already done.
You were playing each other?
Yeah, we were playing each other.
I thought you were like playing other people. And
we're
like,
no, we're playing each other. We both mulligan to zero already, and as a side thing, as a joke, I was just like, I bet you a dollar I draw a land first or whatever, just, you know, not even thinking about it, and a judge overheard, and I got a game loss and lost the match.
There's no common sense anymore. It just bothers me.
Yeah, but that's the thing. Is like half the time these bets are like just fun jokes or whatever. Like you just throw the word bet out there. Like I bet you can't eat a whole sandwich or whatever. You don't even actually put money on the line, and you're already considered. You can get a game loss. And that's the problem with it. Is a wager or a bet, I guess, to the DCI doesn't actually have to have something writing on it. If you just say I bet, it does. The judge, regardless of like. Once you've said the word bet, they're going to start investigating, and then you're probably going to get penalized for it. And the problem is you might not have even been, you know, it might just been a joke bet. Like, I bet you can't, you know, beat Tomohiro Saito. You don't actually put anything on the line or whatever.
Can't put your fist in your mouth.
Just saying the word bet, like, you just screwed over. And that's what the problem is. And, like, judges, their hands are tied. Like, the documents say that, like, any betting is just, like, automatic disqualification, and there's nothing they can do. Of course, they cannot suspend you, which is what happens sometimes. You get suspended from the DCI, but I don't know. It's kind of disgusting, but at the same time, players know how to get around it, and it's, you know, it's, like I said, the unwritten rules of the pro community and any large tournaments or whatever. Is you just, unless you know something's actually, you know, going on, you know, just use common sense, I guess, is the bottom line. Like if you feel that something is out of line and actually affecting a tournament, then just bring it up. But otherwise, just, you know, keep to yourself, let people have their fun, and, you know, go about your day.
Well, let's see, Matthew Bargo, he had a cool EDH game scenario where he just cast Reanimate on a Filigree Angel, he then cast a Rite of Replication that was kicked on it, and then somebody else then played Twin Cast on that. So he said, in the end, there were 10 angels, and he gained 200 life. So he wanted to share that with us.
It's always good.
Well, let's see, Paul from Utah, I actually answered this in email. He just wanted to know, what are the best sites for reading Magic the Gathering articles?
Ooh, I got some suggestions for this.
I'll
let Jack throw out. No, I'm going to let Jack go with the unbiased ones first. Go, Jack.
Oh, God, mine are terrible. Well, of course, my blog, The Better Better Man, which is...
Well, I said unbiased, and he goes with two.
Honestly, though, unbiased...
No, he's not asked for thick chicks. He's asked about magic.
All right, any kind of unbiased magic coverage. If you're into EDH, I got 99 problems in a general, and one is good. There's a couple of different ones. I mean, usually I don't really – this is going to sound stupid. I don't really follow any magic blogs. I kind of just look for the news coverage and stuff like that. So I'm really the wrong person to ask. Conley probably has a lot more information about that.
Fine. Okay. Well, some premier sites.
You sound almost angry there.
No. I was upset that he didn't even bring up. But it's okay. Some sites that yours truly may write for.
Channel Fireball, yeah.
ChannelFireball.com.
Has great information, and we can't forget Gavin's articles as well on Star City Games.
And then there's also TCGPlayer.com, which is another site that I write for that has a whole bunch of other information other than Magic. But
he's
Magic
a whore of words.
I write for two different websites, ChannelFireball.com and TCGPlayer, and I do this wonderful podcast just to promote myself. That's not the reason.
He's also a whore of words, audible words.
But in addition to those three, those are the big three, I would say. There's a whole bunch of other sites, obviously our site, but you already know about it. So then there's top8magic.com will occasionally put up some stuff in addition to their podcast, which we do sponsor here on mtgcast.com. 50 Flores is Mike Flores' blog, and he doesn't update it very often, but it's good to go in there and check it out every once in a while. Blackborder.com is another website. They have a slightly annoying load time on their site, and sometimes it just freezes your whole computer. So it's kind of annoying, but they do have a lot of European pros on there, so it kind of gives you a little bit of a different angle. The StarKingdomPost.com is probably the premier word news site. Where they premier
words.
I guess they're the premier text.
Headlines made of words. Paragraphs made of words.
Yeah, and then there's...
pages made of words.
There is... Let's see, what else do I have on my... of course, Twitter is also a good place to get all this information. If you go to Twitter and find Magic Pros and Magic Personalities and follow them, they will usually send links with their articles and whatnot, and you'll kind of pick up some stuff like that. Of course, dailymtg.com is a good place. If you're interested in vintage, the premier vintage place is themanadrain.com. It's a forum section, but they will also list articles and things like that, and it's pretty much the place to go if you're interested in vintage. The place to go if you're interested in legacy is The Source, mtgthesource.com.
Okay.
And what else do I have? Of course, there's things like Mana Nation.
You stole the only one that you hadn't said, and that was Mana Nation. So I am tapped out.
I'm looking. I got more, I'm sure.
Eric has hundreds of them you've never even heard of.
If you're interested in online drafting for funsies, you just literally draft, but you do not get to play the games, you can go to draft.bestiaire, B-E-S-T-I-A-I.
Sounds like a bestiality website.
No, it's a free word. I gave the English pronunciation to help everybody out. But it's BES.
I thought you were drafting different types of bras there for a moment. That was interesting.
draft.bestiaire.org, and you can do cube drafting, you can do M11 drafting, you can do basically any format ever, and do some fun drafting and just go through some sample drafts. It's actually pretty fun. I do it a lot when I'm bored.
How hard does this compare to like CCG decks? That was another one too, where you could kind of do the same thing. You could simulate drafts.
Yeah, you can do it on TCG Player as well, but you only do it once per day, and then you have to pay for any additionals. But this one you can do IMFI for free. I think that's all the ones I have that are not local. So yeah, that's my contribution. I gave a lot, so hopefully... but the big three are definitely ChannelFireball.com, TCGPlayer.com, and StarCityGames.com.
Okay, if you're just looking for straight-up strategy articles.
You'll find the most pro articles, and you'll also find there's investment columns in those on at least two of those sites. All of them also sell cards. There's also some casual stuff about EDH and about... multiplayer, Benny Smith. There's judges that write for the sites. There's videos that go up. Channel Fireball does a ton of videos. I have some draft videos and whatnot up there. I'll be doing some more shortly, by the way, for anybody that's curious. But I've been on the road since M11 came out, so I've not had a chance to do any and record them.
All right. There you go. There you go, Paul. All the blogs you could ever imagine to go read.
All of them.
Let's see. Nathan Weber, he writes in. He recommends a crappy sci-fi made-for-TV series called The Librarian. I have never heard of this, but he says it's worth checking out.
Oh, it's terrible.
He says it's pretty bad.
It is terrible.
And he also wants to, for some of the naysayers, he does enjoy the occasional non-magic talk as long as it's always secondary to the magic content. So, I appreciate that.
Well, speaking of non-magic talk and shows that are sci-fi that some people have just started watching, I have finally been conned into watching Lost.
I saw like one episode of the first season. So
yeah,
I'm a bird.
I had yet to ever watch it, but I got Netflix finally and streaming, and therefore
It'll change your life. If you love B movies, it'll change your life. I'm watching Razorfish right now. It's good.
I'm sure it's not good. I'm almost through the second season, and no spoilers, please, because I will be upset at you. But it's actually a pretty good show so far. The main reason I didn't watch it is because everybody else watched it, and I don't watch a lot of TV anyway.
Are you like a slavering convert where you have to like tell everybody you see in the street that's the best show that's ever been made? Have you seen Lost? It's the best show ever.
No. I care less about that. I don't even think it's the best show ever made. I still like my favorite show of that like primetime thing or whatever is still House, just because I enjoy the character development. But Lost actually has really good character development, and it's less a sci-fi show than it is a character development show that kind of like, you know, showcases these individuals and their lives and everything.
So you're saying basically it's like designing women on an island.
With death.
Smoke monsters, you know.
Yeah.
Delta Burke and aliens.
But, so I have been involved in that. So anyone that wonders what I've been doing, I actually don't even have StarCraft II yet because I figure
you're killing me.
All my traveling and magic playing and Lost, I literally, if I played StarCraft 2, I would sleep one out.
That's very good, Conley. Don't play any StarCraft 2. It's for nerds. Remember.
It's so good.
No, trust me. As soon as I'm done, I'm still, I have Nationals in 2 weeks, then Sweden, Amsterdam, and Portland, all back-to-back. So I'm still got 5 more weeks on this trip. And once that's over and Lost has been concluded for me, I'm sure I'll be playing 1 million hours of StarCraft 2.
You will love every minute of it.
I was around for the original go-around, and I've definitely been looking forward to the second one for a while. I had the chance to play on beta, but I didn't want to spoil it, so I just didn't play on beta.
Oh, okay. Let's see. Next we had Jordan. He wrote in that he actually got to play the incredibly rare arcade game Match of the Gathering Armageddon. This is the one there's apparently only 6 of these ever made.
It's like an actual arcade.
Yeah, there's only 6 ever copies that were ever produced. The reason he got to play is he worked at the Seattle Wizards of the Coast arcade about 10 years ago, and they had one of these. And this came up that we were kind of lambasting pretty much every Magic game that wasn't Duels of the Planeswalkers or MTGO. We talked about like Battlegrounds and some of the other ones that, I guess the MicroProse one was good, but that again was simulating the game of Magic.
Shahrzad.
Is that the MicroProse one?
No, I'm talking about it's not called Shahrzad, it's called what the heck is it called? Starts with an S. I just call it Shahrzad. Magic Gathering, the old one. It is the MicroProse one.
I said Jack, I'm like, you have to help me, I have no
idea. Starts with an S, what's it called?
Shalandra?
Shalandalong, yeah.
Chandelar, yeah, I call it Shahrzad as a joke. But.
Okay.
Because it's a game within a game, get it? No?
Yes.
Arhar.
I was trying to ignore it because it was that bad of a joke. Let's see. Bitch. No, he just wanted to email in to say, if anybody ever played this game, let us know, because he actually got to try it. I was able to find a couple of screenshots online. That is about it.
Does it look horrible or awesome?
It's 10 years old, so the graphics looked pretty bad, but the gameplay sounds kind of cool. It was a dual-style fighting game that used a trackball. So you like absorbed energy from your opponent's energy blast, you could unsummon their creature, summon your own. It said you had 3 buttons. You had a blast button, a summon button, and a teleport button. I actually found the ROM for this and was trying to play it in MAME, but I could not get it to work. It's currently not supported by MAME, because I wanted just to give it a try. So right now, unless you somehow find one of these, you cannot play this game. So if you've had the experience of playing this game for a prolonged time, let us know. We'd love to hear about it. Let's see. Will B, he was very helpful. He sent in some Team Fortress 2 tips for me, because I don't know what I'm doing in that game. Let's see. Andrew Boy, he sent in a very well-written email about the whole disqualification conundrum. And he also got 25th at Canadian Nationals, so congratulations. And potentially my favorite email of the week is from Will Jussick. He wrote in to share, the pain of enormous school loans that we mentioned last week, and also talking about having your cats go senile. He talks about his erstwhile cat, Snowflake, who as it became more demented, it would just sleep in its water bowl, and it was all white. It would, once it got tired of sleeping in the water bowl, it would go lay on the bath mat that was green, so it slowly dyed itself entirely green. So I like that story. I thought that was really good. Matt from, is KT, that's Connecticut, right?
There's no way KT, it's Kentucky.
Oh, CT, sorry, CT.
Oh, okay. I was like, there's no way KT is Connecticut unless the person is just a complete moron.
No, that's me being the moron, actually. So Matt from Kentucky with Connecticut with a K is worried, and this is actually maybe a kind of, you can answer this a little bit, Conley, is he's worried that the precedent for professional level Magic after the whole wager, the Esper Charm incidents, will turn it into even a less friendly and potentially just a silent format where people are just afraid to talk.
No.
And you kind of alluded to this before a little bit.
No, but like I said, pros, that idea that pros are like these super uptight people is not even an actual truth. It's more, that's more like the PTQ, the top level PTQ players and stuff like that, because they feel like they have something to prove to the rest of us. The actual pros, they're pretty happy with where they are. Like, they know what they're doing, they know where they are, they're, you know, having a good time, living life, and they don't have anything to prove anymore. Like, I could literally, I mean, I don't plan on doing this, by the way, but I could literally never, ever top 8 another Premier event again, and people are going to, you know, acknowledge me as a good player, and they're going to still enjoy my decks, and they're going to enjoy me, and, you know,
it sounded awesome.
No, I know, it sounds bad, but you know what I'm saying, like, it sounds a little cocky too, but I'm not trying to be cocky, but like, I've hit a point where as long as I continue to play Magic and put forth an effort to help other people with their game and whatnot, it doesn't actually matter. For instance, there was a long point between Worlds 2007 and like within the last 6 months where Patrick Chapin literally had no finishes that were worth noting, and he was still the most read author on Star City Games just because he was putting out content, trying to improve the metagame, and people knew he was a good player. He had already proven himself. And the difference between that and a high-level PTQ player is that these players, they're out to like make a name for themselves, and I think that sometimes they go about it the wrong way, and they kind of create a bad name for the player base as a whole. But in general, I find if you actually interact with a pro-level player, whether it's, you know, actually playing them or just going up and talking with them after a match or something like that, you'll find that in general we're good guys. We're not, you know, not cutthroat. We're not trying to eat your brain or whatever. Like, during a match, we obviously want to win, but outside of that, like, you know, we're just normal people.
See, I think the problem, though, is like you said, is once you get to know, you know, like, I've gotten to meet some people because of the podcast. But if I wasn't be doing this and I was trying to get into more of that professional level, I'm going to have to go through that competitive PTQ level player. And I could see people just saying they don't even want to try because it feels like it's such a negative culture.
It's true. And those PTQers are the ones that, you know, set a bad name or whatever. But at some point, also, the perceiver has to take on some responsibility and go, well, you know, the small sample size of me meeting these three PTQ douchebags should not apply to all pro players, and they need to take it on themselves to like actively go out and meet actual pros or meet real like high level players and stuff like that. Because in general, like I said, everyone's, you know, a good person. We're just like everybody else. You know, we just happen to have some success at this game that we all love. But other than that, we're just normal people, and like, you know, we're not actually the devil or anything like that. So like, you know, people are usually afraid. I get emails all the time that are like, you know, I thought it'd be weird to come up to you and ask you these questions and blah, blah, blah. And, like, at first it is when I was young in my success, it was a little weird for people to come up or whatever. It was flattering, but it was weird. But at this point, I'm kind of gotten used to it, and, like, I understand that people aspire to kind of be in the same position I'm in. And so, you know, it's my job to give back to the community and give them some fruits and wisdoms and whatnot that, you know, kind of shed some light on my situation. And, you know, I have no problem talking to or interacting with players that might not have had the luck that I've had. So, you know, it's all, I don't know, it's, like I said, it's definitely all blown out of proportion. The wagering thing, the views on the pro players, everything. You know, we're just people. We just love this game. That's basically it.
Now, as long as people continue to enjoy you, Conley, I think I'll be happy. Jack, do you enjoy Conley?
Conley is an amazingly sweet, manly, humble man, the likes of which this podcast most certainly needs.
What do we got next on here?
Whoa. One second. Let me savor the erection I just got for 3 seconds.
Oh.
All right, proceed.
It, does it hurt when it's taped down like that all the time?
No. I hate you. So that does remind me of a story, and since we're at the end of the towards the end of the show, I don't mind telling this. Everyone knows the issue with men in the morning. And I wouldn't say it's an issue, but everyone knows what happens.
It is biological to have a boner when you wake up in the morning.
Yes. There was one time during college when I had fallen asleep, and in the morning, I'm a very restless sleeper. I turn back and forth and whatnot, and I had somehow gotten the sheet completely wrapped around it to the point where, like, it was pulled taut, and I was asleep. I didn't know this, and I woke up and turned over to get out of bed and literally bent the crap out of it to a point where it was painful and screamed and had people knocking on my dorm room door because they didn't know it was up.
Don't come in. Don't you come in here.
It was quite the... I mean, there was no permanent damage done, and it's not like it stayed that way or anything, but at the time, I was afraid for my life. I was like, I'm going to end up with a bent penis for the rest of my life. It's not going to be good for me.
Please don't stay this way. Please don't stay this way.
It was so painful. I was like, how did this even happen? Like, it was ridiculous. But anyway.
It is physically possible to crack, I mean, you want to call it crack, but break a penis.
I mean, you basically break the cartilage, right?
Well, it's not cartilage. You have these kind of two, it's almost like two Twinkies inside the penis that fill up with blood. They're almost like a spongy material. And they get hard enough where, if I were to take one end and the other one and to say, do like the ninja chop in half thing, you could theoretically basically snap it. It'd be like snapping a piece of celery or something like that.
Is it repairable?
Kinda. I mean, because you can put needles in, drain the blood out, and stuff like that, but it's not easy. It could be irreversible.
Okay, well, this is from the base that it bent, so luckily it was not like halfway. Okay.
And the penis actually goes in. Okay, dirty magic talk. Sorry, the actual base of the, I'm using air quotes for base, is actually somewhat inside the body. So,
but I meant like there was less chance that it would like.
Yeah, we weren't gonna like crack it in half or something like that.
Yeah,
that is a one in a lifetime thing though that you're probably gonna do. Unless you're into that thing, but
it was quite bad. Like the
All right, next. See, there we go. It's been a while, Kylan. It took us a while in the show to get back there, but we're back.
You have no idea how exhausted I am right now. I'm like literally jet lagged, even though I haven't flown for a week now. But like just driving and being awake at such strange hours all during Gen Con, I'm not on my normal. Usual self today, but I'll get used to it. Like next week, I'll probably be casting again. And then I don't know if you have. How long are you going on that trip during Nationals?
Basically, I'll be back on like Tuesday, I believe.
Okay, so we probably will not get a Nationals cast up, despite me being in your hometown.
Yes, I know, and I felt kind of bad. I am going to Puerto Rico, so that's cool. But I wish I could do both. That's where it comes down to.
Well, you can't because Nationals does not occur in Puerto Rico,
or on the island off of Puerto Rico where I'm actually going.
Puerto Rico is fun. Just guard your wallet.
Yeah, I'm going to Vieques, which is kind of off the East Coast, so pretty laid back. And
are you
going to
go to some bioluminescent bays while you're there?
Yeah, we've gone there before, and the bioluminescent bays were amazing. That was one of the coolest, most surrealistic things I've ever done.
I didn't get to go during the nighttime. I only got to go during the day, so it wasn't as exciting as it should be.
During the night, especially if it's a cloudy night, so you don't have the moonlight, it's just amazing. Because you really are, like, surrounded by neon lights. And then every once in a while, like, a fish or something will swim at you, so you see this, like, neon lightning bolt shooting at you, and it just freaks you the hell out.
Would you call it boner-breakingly amazing?
It is boner-breakingly amazing. I don't know if I can use that as a title, though, because I got in trouble the last time for two in the butt.
Fair enough.
Let's see, George?
Why don't we call it Against All Odds? There we go.
Against All Odds, there we go.
I don't know if that's not funny, though. That's the problem with that one.
Because the ones I have down so far were Conley Loves Slow Bad and Gas X at Gen Con. At Gen Con.
Oh, you can also call it Conley Enjoys Himself.
Conley Enjoys.
What about Slow Bad Romance?
Ooh, that one's good, too.
There we go.
I always have to have a bunch of options to go through. Slow Bad Romance. Okay. I know it's exciting to hear me take notes. I'm going to stop doing that right now.
Slow Bad Bone Bad. All right, go ahead. Continue.
Slow Bad Bone. I might be able to pull that one off.
I don't know. You probably could. I don't know.
It doesn't actually say boner in it. There we go.
Oh, it says bone bad.
Yeah, I think that's safe. Let's see. George, he says we were talking a little bit about the 6-card boosters. They are out there for M11. People say they've been seeing them at Walmart.
They're still around?
Yep. Apparently, people have sent in pictures from their phones of M11 6-card boosters.
That is definitely the one thing that Wizards has done last year that has been, I would say, an overwhelming failure.
Yes. Because really the usual contents, six card booster, you get a basic land, three commons, an ad card, and then the last slot's either an uncommon, a rare, or a mythic.
Wait, so, which means it's almost always an uncommon.
Yeah, so I mean, it's just a terrible deal. I don't understand them at all.
But players, it got some talk stirred up, which is never a bad thing. But in general, compared to all the other stuff they've done over the last year, it's not been good.
Yeah. Let's see. Mark, he also wrote in, we were talking about the use of different sleeves for your power cards. He said he's played at people that actually use the top loaders, those like kind of more hard, rigid plastic ones.
So ridiculous. I played against a guy, one of my first... So I played competitive vintage before I ever played anything competitive. I was literally playing nothing but FNMs, and I was doing some power tournaments for, you know, 10 proxies or whatever for a piece of power. And I definitely played against people that do that, and it's taller than any deck ever. It's like equal to effectively like 300 or 350 cards in sleeves. And, you know, you shuffle like 25 cards at a time, and you have to drop them into each other, and you only pile shuffle, and they're like clankety-clanketing, and sometimes they use screws and stuff, and you figure they can mark all their cards, you would never know it, and it's just the most annoying thing of all time.
So, Mark agrees with you. Yeah, he said it was fairly amazing. Isaac Ramsell, he wrote in mentioning the card Palatian Accord for my EDH deck, which is actually a very interesting card from Guild Pact. Basically, it's a 3, a white and a blue, it's an enchantment. Every time a creature is tapped, you put a shield counter on this, and then you can remove a shield counter to prevent the next one damage to yourself.
It's true.
So in a big multiplayer EDH game, he says it just gets insane.
Are you running Dovescape in your deck?
I just ordered one online to put in my deck. Because that card is... People hate you, because now all of a sudden everything gets countered besides creatures. And
you know, Tom, you can occasionally send me an email and be like, Conley, I know you have 1,000,753 crappers laying around your house that you would never want to sell because they're not worth anything. Do you have these particular cards? I'm like, sure, Tom. Here, let me send you these since you're such a great guy. But you don't do that. You go buy your stuff.
I would feel bad just asking for free cards. Like, I would feel like I'm taking advantage of you.
You're giving me free hotels and stuff. Why would I?
That's true, but you don't know what the catch might be on that.
I will trade a Dovescape for a hotel every day of the week. Anybody that wants to buy me hotel rooms, Dovescape's on the house.
Okay, well, you can just bring it with you. Bring the Dovescape. I'll take
it. I don't have it now. I'm in Indiana. I didn't bring in my entire collection.
Oh.
See, that's what I'm saying.
Yes. Off the list again.
Yeah, let me know ahead of time. But if you do need, I got a bunch of M11 random crap.
Oh, so that's a look for it.
I got a Frost Titan.
Oh, you do? That card is really good, actually.
I don't know about really good. It's good.
Good.
Let's say it's good. I still don't think it's as good as Sphinx of Drow.
See, I think my problem is I've been doing some M11 drafts, and then in that, it just makes you want to rage quit.
Yeah, I had one. My sealed deck that I end up winning the sealed thing with on Sunday, it had a Frost Titan, a Jace, a Nantuga Shade, a Necrotic Plague, 2 Mind Controls, 2 Doom Blades.
Jesus.
Flag Sickness, Air Elemental, or Air Servant. It was pretty good. So yeah, I definitely knew the... I had a Diabolic Tutor, and I grabbed Frost Titan quite often with it. So I definitely felt the power of the Frost Titan. And two things got countered by it. I countered a Stabbing Pain on my upkeep, because he only had 1 mana, or 2 mana. And then I countered a Mystifying Maze activation.
Did they just forget? Is that what happened?
Yeah, they just forgot, because the ability is mostly irrelevant.
Sweet. That's awesome. Let's see. Brad Wilson, he writes in about somebody did a rage quit during an Arch Enemy game. Is that somebody would like to play, they would have a Nova Blast Wormout, and then they'd get the scheme Nature Shields Its Own, where you can only get rid of it if you get attacked by 4 or more creatures. But when a Nova Blast
Worm... I applaud this man.
When the Nova Blast Worm kills all creatures every turn, it's hard to get 4 creatures out attacking to get rid of it. So I thought that was pretty funny. So Jack is happy with that.
Try hard enough.
Stephen Wallace, he wants to write in, I got this very wrong last episode. I could not remember which state was the show-me state. That is Missouri. So there you go.
I was going to make a racist joke, but I couldn't come up with something.
Good. Paul from Humble, Texas, he agrees that Boomerang plus Isochron Scepter is very annoying. And he also sent in this really cool picture of he got a ponder done by Dan Scott with altered art, where he kind of redid art on the 3 balls. It looks very nice. I'd love to have one of those 3-ball ponders and have somebody have them put like ET on it for extra testicle. Like a little ET guy on there. I think that'd be fantastic.
That's where you went with it? You could have gone anywhere with 3 balls and you went with ET?
You've never told the ET joke to somebody. What do you call an alien with 3 balls?
I've never called
ET the extra testicle.
why would I ever tell that joke? Nobody would ever laugh at it.
Joke.
And, no one would ever laugh at it, and they would go, you're an idiot for taking the time to think up this horrible joke.
No, because you just, in your mind, you think about an alien with three testicles. It's almost like Total Recall, and the lady has three boobs. She asks the guy, and he says, I wish I had three hands.
But how do you...
Public school does not contain the potty humor that you do, Tom.
How do you even know that the that the traditional number of testicles for an alien is two, huh? How do you know?
Because I am, what would it be, species-centric? What would you call that? Human-centric?
Specious.
Specious, maybe? I'm a specious. I'll admit that.
You son of a bee. Yeah, I said bee.
That's how I roll. Let's see. Russ, here you go, Conley. Last email of the week. Russ writes in saying he loves the show and that baby powder is a lifesaver.
Dude, I have some in my bag right now, and the problem is I've been noticing this. I gotta come up with a small carrying device to throw in my bag to carry extra, because when I was at Gen Con, I'd be out for 24 hours at a time, and unfortunately, baby powder does not have the lasting power to last 24 hours.
We had a listener, I don't think you were on the show that week, that he
about
said
about the sock?
Yeah, about the sock.
Yeah, but you still can't just throw that in your bag, you'll still get baby powder everywhere.
Well, you can just put it in a Ziploc.
Yeah, I guess that's what I'll have to do, because I was noticing I'd walk to the convention center, everything would be fine, I'd walk around for a little bit, and then come, 6 o'clock or whatever, it would start to creep up on me a little bit. Plus, eventually, if you do sweat a lot, which will happen, not constantly, but over the course of 24 hours in hot Indiana during the summer or whatever, you eventually sweat enough, and then you get this pasty kind of stuff, and it's gross. So I need to start carrying baby powder around with me on my person at all times.
Whatever you do, kindly don't take your baby powder in little tiny plastic baggies. People might think you're just doing cocaine in the bathroom.
I'm going to take little plastic baggies and I'm going to put rubber bands around them instead of using
them. Yeah, hide them in your... Where do you hide your baby powder? I keep it in my rectum.
And then I'll also make sure I bring a little compact mirror with me. That way I can look at me apply baby powder and no one will ever... And a razor blade too.
I just imagine you like hobbling into the bathroom at Gen Con, and you come out 2 minutes later with a spring in your step. You're like, guys, I'm ready to draft.
Razor blade and mirror and baby powder. How would you... That would be the most... That would be the worst joke ever. You're trying to tell the airport people. You're like, nope, I switch baby powder. They're tasting it.
Well, this happened to my... We weren't married at the time. We had just started dating, but we'd actually set up to go study in Australia during college, independently, but we ended up going to the same place at the same time. So we were kind of doing our packing together, and she was really into, using herbs in her food at that time, and she had a lot of oregano. And she wanted to bring oregano with her, but she wanted to save space. So she was trying to take it out of the oregano shaker into, a plastic bag. And I strongly recommended that she not do this.
I mean, they're not going to check your bag for marijuana, usually. People travel with marijuana all the time.
Okay, you probably shouldn't say that on a...
Another secret about the pro world.
I didn't say I travel with marijuana all the time. I'm saying people travel. There's no way people don't just throw it in their bag. I don't know.
You're true. She got more trouble for the popcorn she had in her bag than for the oregano.
Exactly. It just seems...
Because I thought she was going to somehow plant over Redenbacher there and start a plague. I don't know what that
was
about.
When we went to go see Inception, 3 weeks ago or whatever, we actually brought, I can't remember, it was some fast food place, I don't remember what we bought, but we, snuck it in our pockets into the movie theater, then, busted it all out and just, had a three-course meal while I watched the movie. We were, so worried someone's going to come in and see us, but whatever.
All right, guys, we are done with emails, and as I promised, we are announcing the winners of our From the Vault set contest that we've had going for a couple weeks. And this has been by far our best turnout for a contest to date.
Would you like to restate what the objective of said contest was?
Yes. So for people, if you didn't enter, it's too late, but here you go. Our whole contest was create the next From the Vault set. 15 cards with a theme. Go crazy. And people made some really, really good entries.
I guarantee the From the Vault Ooze set won.
The prize, I did not actually give a prize to the Ooze set because there were so many people that made that, there would have been no way to pick the best one.
Okay. I assume somebody made it for you. There's probably let me think. I don't know the winners yet, but I'm not looking at the page. I'm trying to think of what Tom and his infinite wisdom, From the Vault Tribal, was that one?
No, not exactly.
Oh, I thought From the Vault Tribal.
People were much more creative than that. That's why I said this was amazing.
All right, I'll let you go. Go for it.
So I'll go through the winners and what you win. If you are one of the winners, email me your mailing address so I can send you your prizes. I'll have a link to all these in the show notes. I don't have enough time to read through all the cards, but I say take the time to click on them. They're worth it. So our first winner, Archenemy T-shirt and a Dragon Archenemy deck, is Absurd Paradox with From the Vault Epic Beards. This is a very, very well done set where all the characters have really big beards on them. The next winner with an M10 intro deck is Alexandrite with From the Vault Invitational. So they took all the cards that were created by the Invitational winners and made that into a From the Vault set.
Was there enough?
I'm trying to remember exactly. And some people did add in like a card from a future set as a way to kind of pad it.
Oh, okay.
So kind of cards in this is, yeah. And some of them were inspired. But yes, there were enough.
So like,
We have they're actually in alphabetical or chronological order. We have Sylvan Safekeeper from 97, Oli Rod. Avalanche Riders, Darwin Castle, 98. Rootwater Thief, Mike Long, 99. Meddling Mage, Pecula, 2000. Shadow Mage Infiltrator, Void Mage Prodigy, Solvum. I can't never say this word.
Simulacrum.
Simulacrum, I can't. That word will forever. Dark Confidant, Rakdos Augur Mage, Gemstone Caverns, Ranger of Eos, Oracle of Moldiah, and then Marugo, the Heart of Silence.
Okay. Is that supposed to be like Tiago Chance card?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
And that one, people weren't sure it's out. This is, everybody wanted this. Legendary land, tap, add one colorless mana to your mana pool. Channel, two colorless mana and two blue, discard Marugo, the Heart of Silence, counter target spell.
Still being worked on by R&D, because I definitely talked to Aaron Forsyth about said card, and he said it will be out, they just don't know when.
Oh, okay, very cool. Next we have Laserhosen, which I thought was first a pretty good username, with From the Vault, really, really niche. So these were cards that had very narrow things that they did. And the thing that I liked about this is he actually made an entire logo for the set. And it shows a round hole with like a square peg. So it was very, very well. And these were cards.
Give an example of said set.
So we had Camel, Great Wall, Grozoth, Tombfire, Break Open, Wood Elemental, Memory Crystal, things that were just, you know, very specific.
Gotcha.
Next we had the Man in Navy Blue 19. This is all one word. With From the Vault, Legends of the Skyship Weatherlight. So these are all the characters from the Weatherlight saga, but the cards. So again, very well done, a lot of flavor. We had Liliana's... and that person won the Rise of the Eldrazi intro deck. Winner of Liliana's Paper Duels of the Planeswalker deck is SD61 with From the Vault, Sleepers, Trash to Treasure. And these were cards initially nobody cared about, but then something happened, some format came out, some combo started, and these cards became crazy expensive.
AKA Dark Depths?
Dark Depths, you know, Flash, you know, these kinds of things.
Oh, okay.
And then the next bunch of winners, all these people are going to win three random packs of Magic. These packs may be from Alara Reborn, World Wake.
They might be from Italian and Revised.
They'll be either from Alara Reborn, World Wake, M10, or Rise of the Eldrazi. So that's what I have left.
I really want to be their Italian Revised in there.
Nope, no Italian. I would be keeping those. The Turquoise Mage, a one with From the Vault, a token of my appreciation. So all the cards have very cool token mechanics. We have Raging Fury with From the Vault icons, and these are cards like Sarah Angel, Royal Assassin. When you think of an iconic Magic card, it's in this set. A personal favorite of mine is Poisonfly has From the Vault for the win. It's a collection of alternative win conditions, which I thought was pretty classy. Don't scroll down that much. We have the Dean with From the Vault Judge Headaches. So cards that just make you want to quit if you're a judge. And another one, this person...
Is there Ice Cauldron in that list?
I'm pulling it up right now. There are so many links in this that it's hard to keep track. It took me, honestly, a number of hours to go through all these entries.
I'm sure there's like stuff like...
We have Humility, Tarmogoyf, Gideon Jura, Harm's Way, Scheherazade, Abyssal Persecutor, Painter's Servant. What was one you asked about?
Ice Cauldron. I didn't know if it'd be...
I do not see Ice Cauldron.
Or Illusionary Mask.
No Illusionary Mask. We have Trinisphere, Mirror Gallery, Warp World, Blood Moon, Progenitus. Progenitus is a good one. Eye of Mind. So
I feel like too many of those cards are new, but that's okay.
You're so picky. Luckily, I picked the winners.
I am picky. I know too many cards.
You might like this next one, because this is a person who didn't put their name, but if you can email me and convince me this is you, you'll get the stuff. It's From the Vault, quote, fuck this shit, I'm going to go play Yu-Gi-Oh! From the Vault, FTSS, IGGPYGO. So every once in a while you just see one, you actually kind of laugh out loud when you just first read the post. You're just like, what? And this is an exciting, he has a description, exciting new product showcasing every card that has ever caused frustration, despair, fury, or contemplation of self-harm against Magic players. These are cards such as Illusionary Mask, Black Lotus, Pox, or AKA, fuck, I can't do the math. Chains of Mephistopheles, that one I will give you credit for. Ice Cauldron, Raging River, Humility, Dead Ringers, Ancestral Recall, Sensei's Divining Top, Disciples of the Vault, and Stasis. He also has a card from an upcoming new set, Homerid Leper. It's 3 blue, summon Homerid, bands with other Homerid, snow-covered, non-basic landwalk. During each upkeep, put either a plus, it gets leper counters, and if it gets too many counters, you have to bury another creature. It has all these other ones. So I thought that was a very well-done one. We have Sheffy with From the Vault, Portal, and Starter. So it's kind of a collection of cards that are good or interesting that have never been put into the base sets that were not Portal or Starter. I thought those were a good one. And I will pull it up here for Conley before he asks about what cards would that be.
But Portal and Starter? I'm sure there's like Imperial Recruiters and Loyal Retainers. And
yeah, Zodiac Dragon. You know, just kind of interesting cards. And he has some from Three Kingdoms set too that a lot of people just have not gotten to see. Last couple, we have B.N. Richard with From the Vault, North Dakota.
Nice.
So this one was pretty much right for Conley. So this one is interesting in a few ways. Is the first letter of each card spells out North Dakota rules.
No.
And but, not all nice the card, anymore. But the cards also have themes that are related to North Dakota. We have Northern Paladin, Recurring Nightmare, which he says Conley's North Dakota Dream, Treasure Trove, Hollowed Ground, and a lot of Arctic Fox. I thought it was well done. Last but not least, we have Sir Jarlsberg. This was with From the Vault MTG cast. So this person actually went through and made a card for pretty much every person on the show and then a bunch of the other podcasts. So again, if you, it's a lot of work went into a lot of these entries. So everybody, a fantastic response to this one. I thought it was a lot of fun to read through these. If you didn't enter or didn't win, all the entries were good. I just had to pick some. I only had so many packs to give out. Take a look. It's fun to read through some of these just to see what cards are on there, and you'll have a good time. And that is all that I have for Magic news, guys. Or Magic stuff in general. Do we need to wrap this up? Are we talking about Star Control or StarCraft 2, or what are we doing?
I think it's time to share all gross stories and nip it in the butt.
Okay. I'm not sure I think I have any new gross stories. All I've been doing lately is watching YouTube videos like the Double Rainbow and all these other things. Apparently I had missed out on.
Well, I've got one involving a slug if you guys care to hear it.
Oh, yes. No. Depends on where you put it.
All right.
No. All right. No.
So, anybody that's probably under the age of 18 probably needs to quit listening to the show right now. So, anyways, I was reading this. I was reading this on a health-based website where this gentleman was in the act with his girlfriend, right? And he happenstance to reach underneath himself and feel something strange. So, lo and behold, a leech had attached itself to his scrotum, right? Ew. Yeah, so this gentleman removes himself from the middle of the act and walks into his living room and points out to his father that, oh my, I have a leech attached to my scrotum. Well, his dad proceeds to jerk the leech immediately off of the gentleman, right? And his mother happenstance walks by and smells the gentleman's genitals for some weird off-the-wall reason. She thinks that he smells awfully strange, so she walks into his bedroom and finds his girlfriend laying there prone and nude and proceeds to go into a very long conversation with him about safe sex. The end.
How many people were in this room? Like, there's like 6 people in this room and 2 of them were naked?
No, it was actually 2 separate rooms. Like, apparently the guy was in his bedroom and then he walked outside and asked his dad about the leech, and then lo and behold, there goes the rest of the story.
Wow, that is really confusing.
It's really confusing and disturbing when you think about it.
And Jack, I also just noticed on your Twitter feed that you posted a semi-pornographic picture while we were podcasting.
I never post semi-pornographic pictures while we were podcasting. Ever.
Since we are still podcasting and I'm reading it, that is an absolute lie.
I never do things like that, ever.
Is this picture going to hurt my eyes? I'm pulling it up right now.
No, don't look at it. Probably.
It's not really pornographic.
Well, that's why I said semi-pornographic.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, see, I'm very exact. Words mean something, Tom. Words mean something.
All right, guys, it's been a 2-hour marathon. I think my voice is actually getting sore.
Like, yeah,
I need to get some A&W diet root beer because that's what I'm really yearning for right now. So, Conley, it was awesome to have you back. Will you be able to join us next weekend, or are you going to be off on locale again?
No, I'll still be in Indiana, and I should be good to go.
Sweet. And then Well, maybe, Conley, when you are, before I head out, it's like, we'll actually be able to hang out for a while before Nationals. Maybe we can try to put together a quick podcast that day or something, if we want.
Maybe we could. Maybe we could do it over an ice cold, I can't
soda pop.
Yeah, soda pop.
Whatever that fruity wine you were drinking before, whatever it was.
Have you never had sangria? You traveled to the Caribbean multiple times, you never had sangria?
I don't mind, like, I like beer, but I'm not otherwise a big I'm not a huge hard liquor person.
Okay, we're having sangria when I come into town, then.
We call it tier ones. Like, I get either Miller Lite or Bud Light. I mean, that's like my scope of alcohol.
Those are horrible. Some of the worst beers of all time.
See, I like my beer, I need to be able to read through my beer. Like, if I put my beer up, you know, in front of, like, a piece of printed text, I need to be able to read that text through the beer. That's how I judge my beer choosing.
So you like Corona and stuff?
Yeah, Pacifico is my actually all-time favorite.
You're so weak. I'll bring Keystone just for you.
We're going to arm wrestle when you get here just to prove that. Wait, no, maybe I'll have to eat, like, 8 pounds of tiramisu or something to impress you, because that's kind of how you seem to judge these things.
It was money on the line. It wasn't about the food itself. It was about winning the bet.
It was about being manly, though, right? You said it was about proving, like, being competitive. So yeah. So I'm going to have some food here. Like, is there a certain food item that we're going to have to compete on? Like ice cream wafers or something like that?
Chicken wings.
If we did pizza, I might actually be able to keep up with you.
So at Gen Con, we ate at this place called Wings and Rings, which is right next door to the convention center. And
it's like
the first
dirty sexual move or something.
It was, but the first time we ate there, that night we all the two of us that ate there had really bad diarrhea. But there was other people in the room that had diarrhea too, and we thought it might have been the water or something at the hotel room, whatever. So anyway, we were just explosive, gross diarrhea. It was really bad. But then we make the mistake of going back the next. And
well,
later that night,
that's your fault if you went back.
Well, we didn't know what it was, but it tasted delicious. Was the problem? The food was good. Sure enough, that night ended up having not only diarrhea this time, but this time I had spicy wings. So I had spicy diarrhea that burned like a mother effer.
Was there any blood in it? Did you actually have blood?
No, there's no
blood. Oh,
but the problem was the bathroom from where we were in the card in the hall for the cards, literally a 10-minute walk to the bathroom. This is not even an exaggeration. Maybe 8 minutes, but something insane like that. And so I ran back and forth multiple times and missed part of our deck building for 2HG. And it was just not good times overall. And therefore, our two-headed giant name was Indiana Dysentery.
Very nice.
You have to sleep
in the dysentery bed that just has like a plastic sheet with a hole in the bottom to funnel all the diarrhea into one place. So you can measure it to know how much they're losing.
Is that actual?
Yep, that's actual.
That's kind of
gee, thank you, Tom. Thank you for that mental image. Just like a bud.
Measure it with gallon buckets. So there you go. All right, guys. Thank you for listening. This was Monday Night Magic and Medical Discussion News. If you're a winner, email me. It was a very interesting podcast. And we'll be back next week with more Magic News. Thank you guys for joining me.
Bone good, adios. People. Bone good.
Slow bad, bone bad. Or slow. How about slow bad, bone good?
No, but bone good is what we should be doing, but slow bad, currently bone's bad.
Bone's bad. Okay, so that would be... Okay, I'm cutting it off.